is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run. He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He's going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins. Touchdown, Buffalo! McCoy cuts to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
And good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Welcome to rainy Orchard Park, New York. It is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. I'm John Murphy, alongside my broadcast partner, Donald Jones. Yeah, it's rainy. I mean, it's we're getting hammered by rain out here in Orchard Park right now. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know if you can even tell. We have sometimes have a shot of the stadium over across the way, New Era Field, and you can tell sometimes when the weather gets a little dicey because it's crazy rain right now, and I don't think it's going to let up for a while, Donald.
Doesn't
are you okay
like
with
it's
that?
I'm good. I'm good with the rain. I'm hearing snow, though, coming up soon here.
We're You're hearing about, snow?
I'm hearing it's going to be snow coming up here, what, tomorrow, right?
Yep.
So not looking forward to that. But the rain right now, for the people looking on the MSG side, you can see the rain coming down in the stadium. It looks like it's filling up with water in there. No, I'm just playing around. It is raining hard, though. We can hear it right coming down on our studio. You scared?
By rain? No, I'm not scared of rain. Are you?
All right. Just a little wind?
Will your power be okay? Power's fine. Yeah, I'm not. Weather doesn't affect me. You're quite timid when it comes to winter weather, I know. You can't handle
it.
Let's face it.
I need to, like, move to San Diego or something.
This is not really San Diego.
Santa Barbara, they don't get any weather.
Not San Diego, not today. Lots of rain. Lots of talk today about the Buffalo Bills, and we're happy to have you with us. Sean McDermott is going to join us at 1 o'clock, the brand-new head coach of the Buffalo Bills. We have not had him on since the Combine about 5 weeks ago in Indianapolis, and Coach McDermott will join us at 1 o'clock, get an update on how this first week of off-season conditioning went. He doesn't spend any time on the field with these players, but certainly there's some meeting time, and we will get a sense from him on what this week is like for him and his introduction to this 61 players on the Buffalo Bills roster. Sean McDermott going to join us at 1 o'clock. We'll talk with him about a lot, including a dinner he had a couple of nights ago with Bills greats from the Super Bowl era. Steve Tasker, Thurman Thomas, Jim Kelly, Daryl Talley, Bruce Smith, Cornelius Bennett. Am I missing anybody? I think that was it. All of them having a private dinner with Coach McDermott a couple of nights ago, as reported on BuffaloBills.com. And I want to know, I guess I want to ask him what that was all about, Donald. You know, yeah. What were you hoping to get from that group?
I do. I want to know what you were hoping to get from that group, you know, aside from, like, some good steakhouses and things that they have here in the Buffalo area. What, you know, what can these guys really give to – like, what do they have to offer this team now?
Yeah.
How can they help him out as a coach? I guess, you know, that's my biggest question for him.
Well, we'll have a lot to talk with when Sean McDermott joins us at 1 o'clock. We're going to – Marshawn Lynch, your former teammate, Donald, is back in the news and apparently very close to being back in the NFL with reports from ESPN that Lynch is close to signing on with his hometown team, the Oakland Raiders, after retiring a year ago and finishing up, it appeared, with Seattle. All those carries, all those hits, all that production for Marshawn Lynch, and he hasn't had enough, according to ESPN. He visited his hometown team yesterday. ESPN says a deal between the team and Lynch will eventually happen. What do you think of that?
You know, for me, when we first heard about this, I talked to a couple of people close to Marshawn, and they told me. And I said to them, like, Marshawn can't be coming out of retirement, right? Like, he was done. And they were like, don't be sure. Marshawn really misses football. He had to take a chance. He had to take a year off to get his body back. That was the biggest thing, man. He's taken a pounding over the last 5 or 6 years out there in Seattle. And, you know, I think he really just wanted to rest his body up. And once you rest up and you feel good, then you're like, man, how old is he? Like 31 years old or something like that? He's ready to come back and play now. You know, plus he's saying he only wants to play for Oakland. That's the team that, you know, he grew up in Oakland. He's very prideful about that city. He does a lot in that community. And they're about to leave and go to Vegas. And I think he, not just wanting to come back and play football, he looks at that team as being a good team right now. They are a team that can win, and he feels like he can help that team possibly win a Super Bowl before they leave Oakland.
So we're going to talk about Lynch going possibly back to football, back with the Raiders, and we're also going to talk about the Seahawks, his former team, and where they're at with Richard Sherman, with reports that Richard Sherman is on the trading block. Don't rule it out, according to John Schneider, the Seahawks general manager. We're going to talk with Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune coming up at 2 o'clock. Not Greg Bell, played running back here in the 80s. No, sir. This is Greg Bell, reporter for the Tacoma, Washington newspaper about the Seahawks. They are in the news today, and we'll talk with him about that. So all of that coming up on the show today. You're always welcome to join us. The phone line's open at 803-0550, toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter. On Twitter, we have our Twitter poll, which is up and running. You are invited to participate, invited to vote, or even chime in on Twitter. And it deals with the news this week that the NFL has reached a deal with Amazon. Amazon, a $50 million deal for streaming rights to Thursday night NFL football games. 10 games, $50 million. Look, the NFL has been through this a couple of times in a row now, a couple of years in a row. 2 years ago with the Bills game at in London against the Jacksonville Jaguars. That was streamed online by worldwide by Yahoo.com. Last year it was Twitter, right, that did the Thursday night football games online worldwide. They didn't take these games off network TV. This year it's going to be Amazon, $50 million for the streaming rights. Amazon was in talk with cable providers for a standalone internet TV service, and this is one way. Obviously, the NFL has a great ability to deliver real-time audiences, maybe more than any other television out there right now, right? Most people watch TV, and they manage the TV around their time. You know, right? You do that.
Yeah.
I do that.
I mean, how many people actually DVR things now, you know, instead of watching it real time because you don't want to see commercials,
right?
And so you'll DVR something so you can fast forward through the commercials. Now games themselves, I don't know if I can do that because I'm going to see the score before I even watch the game.
And
and so if I see that a team has won, it's like I'm not going back to watch that game now. That I can't do, but I understand why, you know, you do it and we do it here, because obviously you want to watch the TV copy as well as watching the all 22.
So yeah, and that's what the appeal for all of these streaming video services, Amazon, Twitter, even Yahoo a couple of years ago, the appeal is real-time TV.
Mm-hmm.
So the people don't time shift and watch it on their own time, and the commercials are there. And it is appealing. $50 million for 10 games from Amazon, beating bids from Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. All of them, you would think, lining up to the NFL and saying, take our money. We want your service. We want what you can deliver. Amazon is expected to parlay it into their Amazon Prime members, which, you know, they already have subscriptions for Amazon Prime. The NFL is sort of working around the edges of, is it pay-per-view? No, not yet, because they still have the free TV, the network TV available, and there's no indication in sight that that's going to end soon. But you give the league credit for kind of working around the margins here, testing the waters when it comes to streaming video. And who knows where it goes from here. I guess we want to take the temperature of Bills fans on this show and NFL fans in general. How do you watch the NFL product? How is the NFL product delivered to you? It's changing now, and I know our audience will be one particular way, but it is changing. It's TV. It's streaming video. Some people want to watch the games on their phones.
Yeah.
Right? You've done that.
I've seen you do that.
Watch games live on their phones. Some people want to just keep track via social media, via Twitter. Some people want to watch NFL Red Zone Network. All I care about is my fantasy team. All I want to know is who's scoring touchdowns.
Right.
All of that goes into the picture. Our Twitter poll deals with that. With the Amazon deal, the $50 million deal to buy the streaming rights for Thursday Night Football, at this point in this audience that is watching our show today, what do you think is the best way to follow the NFL? What's the best way to take in an NFL game? Give us your thoughts on that. We've got 275 votes in so far. We offer up four alternatives. We may be forgetting some others. 57% of you, half of you, say the best way to follow an NFL game is to watch it on TV. 57% say that. 36% say live in attendance, in attendance at the stadium. 36, about a third of you say that. 6%, only 6% say streaming. 1% say social media. Social media means you're probably not watching the game, but you're following the game.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your favorite way right now today to follow an NFL game? Not NFL news, not shows like ours, which don't really deal with the games themselves, but to follow the games themselves, what's the best way to follow it in your mind? Is it watching the game live on TV? Maybe you have the big HD screen, 55-inch screen at home. Pretty good way to watch the NFL. I admit that. Maybe you're a diehard that wants to be here in attendance, and you're committed to that, season ticket holders and people who come to, you know, several games per year. Maybe it's streaming video. Maybe it's your tablet, your phone. This is how I want to follow the game. I have other stuff to do on Sundays at 1 or Thursdays at 8:30. I want to just be able to have the game available on my phone so I can do the other thing. Maybe it's something else. Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The phone line's open. 803-0550 is the number. Outside Buffalo, toll-free call 1-888-552-550. Or via Twitter. You can vote in our Twitter poll. You can respond to us on Twitter. Look, it's changing. And more so for guys your age, your generation, Donald, than mine. I mean, I have a definite thought about how I like to follow NFL football, and it has nothing to do with my phone and very little to do with streaming video, and certainly has nothing to do with looking at tweets on NFL games. Look, there's nothing that replicates the in-stadium experience. And this place across the parking lot here has done about as good a job as any is making that experience memorable from the pregame, the tailgate atmosphere outside the stadium, into the stadium where you have many of the amenities that people like, including out-of-town scores, you know, NFL scores and highlights from other games, comfortable seating, waitress service. I mean, you can, and this is just the tip of the iceberg here. There are venues around the NFL that do it even more elaborately than it is done here in Orchard Park. I think here in Orchard Park, these fans here, because of their loyalty and because of their passion for the game, they've created an atmosphere here for in-stadium that is unlike anything else in the National Football League in terms of noise and excitement and passion for the team, both positive and negative, as some of these seasons have turned out. You don't get that over the television. You don't get that certainly over the tablet or over the phone, and you sure as hell don't get it on Twitter. So I think in-stadium is number one. Number two is the TV experience. If I can't go to a game, and I can go to all these Bills games just because of my job, but if you can't go to a game, if you've got a comfortable seat with a big screen HD TV with access to all the replays, all the different angles, that's a pretty good experience to watch the NFL. Those would be my two choices in that order, live in-stadium and watching on TV. I don't care to follow a game on social media. I don't need anyone else's spin about what's going on in the game. I know that's a big thing, and you know, smart alecky Twitter users will put their particular spin on it, right? I mean, that's what they do, and for some people, that's entertainment.
Social media,
I guess
they
you
definitely
do that.
Do.
You don't do that.
Nah, I don't.
You care on what's on Twitter during the course of a game that you're interested in?
No, not at all.
Right? The game is the game.
The game is the game. Now, I will, like, go and stroll through my Twitter because people do say funny things, but it's not like I'm paying attention to.
So
what,
the game's not enough.
No, when it goes to commercial, I'm on my phone. When it goes, if I'm watching a game on TV, or even if I'm in the stadium watching a game, when there's a timeout, I'm usually on my phone seeing what people are saying.
You're not alone, I know.
So yeah, I'm not alone. But you know, it's not like I really care. It's just people say, my friends and followers say some of the funniest things, and so I want to go and laugh about something they just saw or a commercial or something like that. And I do that not just for football, but for, you know, big time shows that come on, primetime shows at night. You know, when there's a commercial, I'm on my phone seeing what people are saying because it's just funny to me.
See, to me, part of the problems with Twitter is the snark. You can't escape the snark.
You can't.
Can it be funny? Yeah, but it's a little bit, you know, it's to me, it's overwhelming sometimes. Like everybody's got to have the you know, smart alecky reaction to what's going on. And, you know, I get a kick out of even. Last Friday when South Carolina basketball beat UConn, ended that long streak?
Oh, yeah.
And you look at Twitter, and people have nothing to do with basketball, women's college basketball. People have never watched a women's college basketball game in their life. People who have never seen South Carolina play are
Everybody's
just all over Twitter.
In.
Oh, I got something to say about you. Who cares what you have to say? Seriously, why is that? And that goes to the NFL, too. I mean, I know people react and they want to react, but to think that your opinion warrants other people's paying attention, I don't know. Where do you get that from?
You
apparently like that.
It's just some things are funny to me.
Some things are funny.
Some things are funny. It's always funny until it's you that's involved in it, right? And they're talking about you. And then it's like, wait, hold up. What? So, you know, right now it's funny because obviously they're talking about other people. They're talking about a show or something that they saw. But it's tough when you're a player or when people say things to us about what we're saying because it's like, wait, what are you talking about right now? So I get where you're coming from in that stance.
And
but
people
for
don't
me,
even, people rush to it too. They don't even let the game breathe. They don't even let the game kind of –
you don't
even think about it. It's like instant. Oh, this happened. Boom. Here's my opinion. Really?
Yeah.
Think about it for a half a second.
It
anyway.
Is real time. 140 characters.
Yeah.
Let me get this out real fast.
Stupid. Most of them are stupid.
And some, like, I have some friends now that I will, like, unfollow during football season because they just, they'll debate you on everything. And every single play, they tweet something. Literally, like, every single play. It's like they're doing play-by-play. And I'm like, why don't you just go and work in the media and do play-by-play?
Yeah.
If you want to do play-by-play, that's what you need to go do for a living. But for me, watching the game right now, watching the game, the best way to do it, obviously, is on TV. HDTV, all of that stuff. There's nothing better than that right now. But I do realize that it's moving. And I do like to be able to watch it on my phone or on an iPad or something like that if I'm not home. You know, I like that ability to be able to watch something if I'm somewhere else. I do like that.
I understand that. I'm looking at your phone sitting right over there. The screen is, what, 2 inches by 5 inches maybe?
Hold that up. iPhone 7 Plus.
You can watch an NFL game there and see what you want to see on that screen. Is that what you're telling
me? I can watch
Don't you miss stuff video-wise?
No, I mean, you see everything that you see on TV.
No, you don't.
You just don't have the big screen to see it.
You don't see everything. I don't think. How can you see on that? I mean, look, I'm not that old. I know you can see, and I've watched video on the phone, even my smaller phone. Mm-hmm. You can't see what's going on in a game on a consistent. I know you're a student of the game. You can get what you want out of that little phone.
I can get what I want out of that phone. I watch TV right now on my iPad every night, like stream DirecTV every night.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's movies. It's really no movies, everything. Yeah. I can watch it on my iPad.
See, movies are made for in theater.
They are.
They're not made for this screen, that screen, or even your tablet screen. They're not.
How long until you think everything is going to TV? We know everything that's happening right now, and it's all going to internet. And it's all going to be streamed at some point.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about with Amazon and the NFL.
So this is like just experimental stuff that they're trying. Even though they're paying $50 million, Amazon is paying $50 million. At some point, even the big networks are going to have to stream this. And it's just everything is going to be on the internet so that you can watch it on your phone or wherever. And you can see it all the time. Anywhere you are, you can see it.
Yep, I get it, and I understand the benefits to that, but I do think when it comes to NFL football and maybe even Bills football and people's interest in their team, I don't think there's anything that replicates, number one, the in-stadium experience, or number two, the big-screen TV high-definition experience. But let's hear from you. It is our Twitter poll. What's the best way to follow the NFL, follow NFL games? What do you think? It is our Twitter poll. Is it television? Is it in-stadium, live in your seat in-stadium? Is it social media? I don't think so. Is it streaming video? You can vote on Twitter. 803-0550 is the number to call us and talk about it. Or toll free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Scotty in South Buffalo. Get us started, Scotty. How are you today?
Good morning. How are you? All
right. Good. Good afternoon.
I've been going to the Bills game since 62. I've had season tickets since then. I missed 2 years while I was in the Army, but that's it. And nothing else compares to being in the stadium.
Scotty, I definitely hear where you're coming from on that, and it's always fun to go to a game. I think for me, I think different because I played the game. And so now for me, like, I'd rather watch a game on TV than to actually go to the game. I like to hear the commentator. I like to hear your voice, John. I like to hear you talk about the game and hear your expertise. You and Kelso, you guys are the best in the world, and I want to hear you guys talk. So I'll watch a game, mute the TV.
I've never done that.
You're right.
Never. So cut out the baloney. Why would you rather watch on TV than go to a game?
No, I do like to watch to hear the commentators talk about, you know, things that are happening during the game. I do like that. Going to the game for me, is it exciting to be there with the crowd and everybody going crazy? Yeah, I understand that. But, like, during TV timeouts, when you're just standing there and the team, they're just standing out there on the field, that is the worst to me. And I know what it's like because I was on the field standing there like, can we come out of a commercial so we can get back to playing the game?
Mm-hmm.
For me, I'd just rather be watching on TV, sitting at home in the warm.
Yeah, back to
in the warm weather, back to, you know, in the heat of my own home, on my couch, eating popcorn or whatever I'm eating. You know, get your popcorn ready.
You can eat it in the stadium. In fact, you're encouraged to eat and drink in the stadium. They make that pretty easy for you.
But if you eat and drink at the games, then you got to drive home. At least if you're at home, you can eat and drink and don't have to go anywhere.
I'm questioning whether you actually like NFL football. There's a call from Paul in Greece, New York, I assume, right, Paul?
Yes. How you doing, John?
Good. Real good.
The question is, I'm a 27 season ticket holder, and I remember the old glory days with Buffalo Bills football where the stadium was rocking. I know it still rocks where it's loud, but I remember going to games and coming out of that game, my ears would be ringing, and I just think they should be going either 7-1 or 6-2. I mean, they shouldn't be going under 500 with at home field. They should win at least 6 or 7 games a year. It's very frustrating to me because They have a great team, and I'm hoping for them to make the playoffs.
Okay, Paul. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to, you know, say they should have this record because the fans are so great. The fans are great, and the fans are ridiculously loyal to this team. And I know this season will probably be sold out just as it mm-hmm. has been for a while, you know, the entire season. And nobody can poke holes in that. But that doesn't automatically mean you win. You got to play well. And I also think, I think the advent of social media and the fact that the television experience has been so enhanced with high definition yes. and better audio, I think, you know, that in a way these NFL teams, Bills included, are competing with the television experience when it comes to in-stadium. They're competing with it. They're trying to find ways to make sure that the folks in the stands have at least as good a look and as good a view and a different but equally enjoyable experience as the folks at home. I had the experience, you know, again, Bills games, I don't go as a fan. I have work to do.
Right.
I went to the NCAA tournament games in Buffalo a couple of weeks ago, first, second rounds, and it drove me crazy because there were replays that, you know, controversial calls, close calls, replays that I know if I was home watching on TV, CBS would have four or five angles.
Oh, yeah.
You could see what happened. And I'm sitting in the stands, and this is an NCAA thing, I believe, and they don't show many of those replays, if any.
But they do.
Why should you have a better experience sitting at home not paying a nickel to see a game than I did paying, what was the tickets, $100 a copy?
Yeah.
You know, why don't I get the replays you get when you're watching at home? I think the NFL does a pretty good job of making sure that you do see the replays when they're pertinent, that you do see the close calls.
Now,
I think they're trying to make sure the stadium experience does not fall short of what you get at home.
Now, let's say the Bills are playing in an away game. Let's just say you're down in New York or up in New England. And there's a close call that they know can go the Bills' way. They won't show that replay in the stadium, right? I feel like that's happened where you can't see it until they come back, and then they'll show the replay, and it's like,
I think
there's
leeway, yeah. I think in some teams, I think, try to manipulate that. But that now that, you know, to be honest, that should end now with the replay challenges being and the replay calls being reviewed in New York.
True.
So it doesn't matter if they're on the scoreboard in Buffalo or Foxborough or wherever, right? Because the official on the field is not going to make the call on replay. That should be over. But
that's
that
right.
has been.
But it's more for like coaches, right? So that the coaches can't look up and see the replay and, oh, I need to throw a challenge flag because I just saw that.
Right.
So they'll wait and then they show the replay after you end up getting to the next play or something like that. Or after you decided you wanted to challenge, then they'll show the replay to the coach. And then the coach is like, oh, why did I challenge that? That was terrible. You end up losing the challenge. So,
Yeah. You
know, it's. Being at the stadium, for me, it's a fun experience to do sometimes. For me, I'm just, like you said, with the high-definition TV and how big the TV screens are, some people even have those projectors at their homes now. It's like high-definition projectors.
But you're Mr. Telephone. Why do
I am
you care?
Mr. Telephone. I do. I mean,
which is it? You can't watch it on a 4-inch screen and then tell me you like the high-definition big screen.
I'll watch this if I'm not home, if I'm not somewhere where I can sit in front of a TV, if I'm busy. You know, sometimes I do get busy, Mark Honan. And I can't, you know, be at home watching the TV. And so I'll watch this on my phone or I have my iPad with me and I'll watch it.
Call here from Jonathan. Hello, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Hey, Donald. I have to say my favorite way is to, even though you make some good points, my favorite way is to watch the stadium because of being around the crowd. But I mostly watch on TV because the tickets are very expensive. I mean, I go to the minor leagues. Fans of like Bison, the Amherst, and the but I usually unless I get a discount, I can never go to a Bills or Steelers game. I just think it's too expensive to go to games today.
Okay, thanks, Jonathan, and thanks for trying and keep at it. I understand that, you know, it is expensive to go to a game.
Mm-hmm.
It is a unique experience, and I understand that people can't afford it and can't especially afford to be season ticket holders. It is a unique experience, and that goes to part of what I was just talking about, how they try to make sure that the in-stadium experience is worth it, you know, worth what those tickets cost.
Yeah.
That's important. And
that
it's got to be
important.
You got to incentivize people to, you know, we've had the, you know, over the years they've, you know, advertising slogans, you know, you got to be there and nothing like being there. And it's true, but you got to make sure that they have to be there, fans I'm talking about. You got to make sure that they're not missing replays, that they're not missing updates from their fantasy team,
mm-hmm.
and they're not missing amazing statistical performances outside of Orchard Park. And you got to make sure that they're getting the food and the beverages that they want and that they're reasonably comfortable, you know, which is why they have the radiant heat above some of the club seats. Yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, but I appreciate how expensive it is.
And sometimes it is fun to be at home with like a bunch of your buddies watching the game. You know, everybody's having drinks. You're eating food. You might have cooked food. You might have had your wife cook food or something like that because, you know, the wives are like in another room or something like that. talking.
Were you like the Waltons? Where you?
I am the Waltons.
What you got going on?
But it is fun sometimes to just have family and friends over and watch the game together, especially if everybody's a fan of the same team, or if you're playing each other, you know, and everybody's battling, going back and forth. That's a good experience as well.
Sounds like a Coke commercial or something you're describing, right?
Coke needs to call me. I can give you some ideas on some commercials.
We're going to break and talk more when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, the John Murphy Show. We've got Sean McDermott, Bills head coach, about a half hour away. Hope you stick around for that. In the meantime, we got a lot of time to talk with you about various topics, whatever you'd like. The phone line's open, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Spent the bulk of the time in the first part of the show talking about the new Amazon deal, a $50 million deal to carry 10 NFL games, live streaming video. The more you read about it, it looks like a lot of money for Amazon to pay, $50 million for 10 games. But when you start thinking about the doors it would open for them in terms of live streaming for maybe other sports broadcasts, you know, a chance to get people to sign up for Amazon Prime, you know, they'll make money that way. And again, it's the initial stages. As we said, a couple of years ago, it was Yahoo and that one Bills game. Last year, it was Twitter. And this year, now it's going to be Amazon with Thursday Night Football, which is – you know, of all the NFL television platforms, Thursday Night Football has been the weakest in terms of performance.
It has. Why not
try it there?
Why not try it there? It's interesting, though, because Twitter paid, what, $10 million for it last year, and they averaged less than 300,000 viewers per minute, while CBS and NBC averaged 15.8 million viewers per minute, you know? So to see Amazon say, we'll go ahead and pay $50 million when Twitter paid only 10 million for it really goes to show, because we know you had Amazon, you had Facebook. I mean, you had all of these different platforms that were bidding for this. And so Amazon was like, we'll go ahead and do this. Like you said, it gets more people to sign up for Amazon Prime. You use Amazon Prime?
Nope.
No? I just signed up for it and I ordered one thing and it came in like the same day.
Wow.
Yeah, it's like the most amazing thing in the world. It's like you can order something in the morning, get home at night, and it's at your doorstep, you know? And I think Amazon is – the NFL is the perfect platform for them to be on, because it will open doors. If it works out for them with the NFL, then they'll end up bidding for the NBA and all of the rest of the stuff as well. So I think it's great for them.
803-0550, the number to call if you have thoughts on any of this. Phone line's open. Let's go to Trevor in Miami. Hello, Trevor. Welcome to the show. You're on the air with us.
Hey, good to talk to you guys. So Hi. Just to weigh in on the where do you like to watch the game. So because I'm not in Buffalo, when I do get back, I love to go to the game for obvious reasons, right? But why I like going to the game as a fan is, one, the camaraderie, right, with other Bills fans. But even when the Bills are down here in Miami, I like as a fan to see what's going on around what you would see on the television, right, what's happening on the sidelines, you know, things like that, you know, what's happening in the commercial breaks, not that there's a lot happening, but it is interesting from a fan perspective to try to kind of get in what's going on around the game, right? And it is interesting to see it as in one big picture versus, you know, the little small components that are shown on television. And then kind of in the middle thing is, just as a Bills fan, because I love the camaraderie so much, right, going to kind of, you know, the Bills bars and watching it with people, you know, watching it with other Bills fans is what I get out of it. And, yeah, I can get that at home, but I can get that more at the stadium or at, you know, more public gatherings.
Yeah, good point, Trevor.
The one thing you definitely get when you're watching on TV is you get, like, you know, a sideline guy like a Sal Capaccio or something like that chiming in on injuries, because there are always injuries throughout the course of the game. And when you're at the game watching the game, you don't even know if somebody went out unless you're really paying attention, like, somebody big name you would know. Sammy Watkins goes down, you know he got injured, but you don't know what's going on behind the scenes and what the team is saying, if he's going to be coming back or not. And so what do you do right now, this generation? What do they immediately do? Go to their phones and try to figure out what Sammy Watkins doing.
What about radio? Seriously, what are you talking about? What do you think we're doing on the radio?
If you're at the game, though.
At the game, bring the earbuds, listen to the game on the radio.
You can do that, but
– why do you dismiss that?
I'm not dismissing
you
it.
You just did. It was very dismissive. You can do that. No, why do you?
I mean, you can do it, but
why
people
wouldn't
really
you do that?
like bring your earbuds and listen to the radio while you're at the game?
Yeah.
That's really a thing?
Yeah.
Man, I guess I'm out of the loop.
No, you're too busy looking at your phone trying to figure out what some slappy friend of yours is saying about the game.
No, I'm not even talking about going on Twitter, but even going to like ESPN to see, you know, what's the update on Sammy Watkins. Let's see what's – is he coming back this game? Is he out for the rest of the game? How does that impact my fantasy?
Radio.
I hear
we
you.
We do it pretty regularly. We sponsor injury updates. That's how regular those updates
man.
Are. Yeah. 803-0550 is the number, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. How do you consume NFL games? Not NFL content, not quality content like this show, but games themselves. How do you consume it? It's our Twitter poll. Let's take a look at how the Twitter poll is doing after about an hour or so up on Twitter. What's your favorite way to take in, meaning watch, consume an NFL game? What's your best way to do it? And keep in mind, you know, we've got the streaming rights thing from Amazon that just came out this week. 56% of you say watching on television, still the king. 36% say you like to be there in attendance. 5% say streaming video, bad news for Amazon. 3% say social media. That's 5% say streaming. You know, I'm joking, bad news. If we would have asked that question 5 years ago, it would have been a blip on the screen. Zero. Nobody would have said it.
Yeah,
for some people, streaming. I assume if we ask that question next year, streaming video will get a bigger
chunk. Every year it's gonna grow as things move more towards, you know, Sling TV and things, DirecTV Now, and people watching more TV on the internet. People are starting to stream through different devices a lot more. It's just our generation coming up. That's what we do. I'm still shocked that people actually bring earbuds and listen to the radio.
They've been doing it for years. Headphones,
really? Walkman. I've never seen that.
They've been doing it for decades.
Man.
Yeah. We actually, home games, Donald, on our flagship in Buffalo WGR, they make arrangement because the broadcast is delayed. Mm-hmm. Because many people, believe it or not, listen and watch on TV at home. We actually have a real-time feed on another radio signal so that people in stadium can watch in real time. It's not a 6 or 7 second delay.
So you mean like when I'm actually watching the game and I turn it down on the TV and I listen to you guys, you and Kelso, because you guys are the best in the world and I just want to hear you guys talk about
well,
it.
Well, some people think that's the way to do it, yeah. I look, I know it goes on. Yeah, it does go on.
Maybe I just never paid attention. I didn't know people really did that.
And again, stop looking at your phone. And I think the caller a minute ago had a good point about soaking up the ambience of the game, you know. What are the trainers doing in the timeouts? What's going on in the timeouts, these long TV timeouts that none of us really love? But stuff goes on, you know. Who are the coaches talking to? What coaches are most animated? What players look disinterested? Who's getting their ankles retaped? All of that stuff goes on during TV timeouts when you're looking at your phone.
Got to get your athlete's foot sprayed. No.
You're looking at your phone, but and this whole thing is playing out in front of you.
And you, this whole thing is playing out. If you were in the stadium, there would be more people on their phones than people have earbuds in listening to the radio.
Yeah.
In the stadium.
No question. I don't think
And people actually, and you're right, though. I mean, this whole phone thing does change the whole way people watch games, the way people are in the stadium, because there are people that are on their phones at the game, and they're just going back and forth between their phone and the play. That's actually happening. There's a play going on, and people are on their phones at the same time.
Drives me crazy.
Yeah.
How about baseball? Do you ever watch baseball on TV? And people with the greatest seats, they probably paid $400 or $500 to sit right behind home plate. Maybe more. Maybe a couple $1,000.
They're on their phone.
They're watching their phone.
Yeah.
What are you looking at on your phone? You've got Major League Baseball like 20 feet away. Or you're NBA. Right. It happens in the NBA all the time.
It
people courtside. You're courtside. There's players right there.
People on Twitter.
Yeah. What?
They're probably on Twitter, though, like tweeting and like
look
they
at
might
me.
Have took a selfie
yeah.
or something like that.
Look at me.
Exactly. That's what a lot of people are doing so that they can get their followers up. This whole generation, it's all about getting your followers. You got to get more followers, Murph.
Here's a call from Gene. And I got more followers than you. Gene and Kenmore. Go ahead, Gene. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to tell Donald that for over 25 years, I was one of those people out there watching the game with the phone with the radio in my ear, listening play-by-play on the radio and watching the game right there and enjoying every minute. Thank you.
Thank you, Gene.
Well,
thanks
thank
for
you,
calling.
Gene. I mean, I just didn't know that was a real thing. I didn't know people really
thing.
Did that.
It's a thing.
Now, I didn't go to many games young. When I was young, obviously, I wasn't paying attention like that. I didn't really start going to games until I played in the NFL. And then after I was done, I would go to some games, but I just never paid attention to it like that.
Let's go to Clarence in Buffalo. Hello, Clarence. Welcome. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. How are you today?
Great.
Good. I just want to say that I am a season ticket holder, and what I do, I go to the games. I enjoy them just the way they are. But when I'm at home, I watch the games, and I do listen to you on the radio. And the reason I really do that is for a different reason, I believe. And that's because of the announcers that they have on a different channel. Because It seems like whenever the Bills are on television, they're not the ones that they talk about very often. Yes, and they have nothing positive to say about the Bills. But like teams like New England, Miami, things of that sort, they seem to get the brunt of the conversations on television.
Yeah, Clarence, thanks for that. Appreciate that. I will say this. You know what happens a lot, and we're doing a different job. Kelso and I on the Bills radio broadcast doing a different job than the network and TV announcers who have a bigger audience and a much more diverse audience in terms of fan interest. I mean, our listeners are Bills fans, most of them here in Western New York. We're speaking from a common frame of reference as most fans. So that may be why you feel like our broadcast is more tailored, and I don't know if it's positive or negative comments, but I feel like, you know, we share this. We know what happened to the Bills last week. We know what happened to him a year ago. Mm-hmm. We all share that experience, and that comes out, I believe, in our radio broadcast.
And you're starting to see that in the big games, like the college championship games, where you'll see ESPN has the big broadcast that everybody watches, but then you can go and watch the Clemson broadcast, or you can go and watch the Alabama broadcast. So you can just hear things about Alabama. You can just hear things about Clemson, hear those guys talk about that. That's kind of like what you're talking about. You focus on the Bills, you know, and you follow the team. You're here every day, you know, so – you guys are doing a different job than what the big networks are doing. And I get why people would say, you know what, Bills fans here watching a game on TV would say, I want to turn these guys down and I want to just listen to Murph and Kelso.
Here is Adam in Lancaster. Hello, Adam. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just commenting. I was a season ticket holder in the 90s. I'm not anymore. But we used to see people listening on their headphones all the time back then. You don't really see it much anymore when I go to the games.
Okay, well, are you going to games anymore? You said you were a season ticket holder, but not anymore?
Maybe once a year, but back then we had an older couple that sat right next to us, and they always had their headphones on, their little radios.
All right, that's two people. Okay, thanks, Adam. Maybe maybe the play-by-play guy was better. He was, as a matter of fact. Fred in Rochester. Hello, Fred. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi, guys. How you doing? Great show, as usual.
Oh, thank you.
We got to get Don caught up on some things. Don is – I love Don. He's a younger guy. I'm an older guy. John, I'm sure you must be a little older.
Or you?
Well, I'm older than I want to say. About 57, so. But I used to enjoy Van Miller. I used to love him. Turn the TV down, turn Van up, and just listen to him because I used to think he was great. And I did have season tickets for. Thank goodness. I thank goodness now. I didn't know it then, but I worked for a place that did some. Work. And as a result of that, our boss bought us season tickets, and he bought us 10 season tickets way back in 1985. And he bought us tickets for 10 years, 85 to 95.
Wow.
And just so happens, those were the years that everything just started to pop. And I'm so thankful of that right now. And I just wish that some of the fans, and we do have a great fan base, don't get me wrong, but I just wish, and John, you I'm sure remember, just the electricity that went right through that stadium. I mean, I can still remember it, even after all these years. And I don't go to too many home games now, but I do watch it on TV, and I do still listen to it kind of on the radio. I'm pretty much old school. I don't do a lot of Twitter, and I don't do a lot of that stuff. But I do like to hear about it, and I really enjoy hearing about it because I know Don is really into it. So it's just a difference in generations, but all in all, everything still remains the same.
Okay, thanks, Fred. I will tell you, and I appreciate I'd like to hear what Donald says. That stadium is electric still. It really is. Players will tell you that. Donald may tell you that in a minute here. it's that stadium still rocks. And obviously the Bills haven't had success over 17 years, playoff success, but it doesn't, you know, it's not great every game. It's not electric every game, but it's a pretty great atmosphere. It's a pretty great place to watch a game. And I don't know. What do you think, Donald? That place.
It's a great place to play a game, and that's home, the home team. When you're away team, I'm sure it's pretty great for those guys as well, because it's nothing like going to another stadium and you just have fans that have signs with your name on them just talking trash to you. Like, that is the best thing in the world, because you get to now go out on the field and silence those fans. And so for opposing teams coming in here, especially for, you know, like the Patriots, those rivalry teams, when they come here, I'm sure it's like hectic for them, you know, but they thrive off of that because they have the fans that are so electric trying to silence them as players, and they get to come out and silence the team. You know, it's the same. This stadium is crazy. It's rocking on Sundays, especially when the Bills are playing well, but even when they're not winning, even like if the team is eliminated from the playoffs, you don't have as many fans in the stadium maybe as like the first games of the season. It's still loud in the stadium. These fans still come out to the games, and it still rocks when they score touchdowns. It's a great place to play.
I think it is. And to your point on road games, I've said this a lot. I love the sound of when the Bills go in and beat somebody on the road, and the last couple of minutes, if it's going to end that way, the crowd kind of acknowledges on the road. I think of Cincinnati a lot last year that, oh my God, we're losing this game, the home team. Love that kind of a vacant sound where there's usually a pocket or two of Bills fans who are making all the racket.
Making all the noise.
Everybody else is headed for the exits. I love that. It's the best thing in the world
really
to see that on the road.
Thing.
I wish every Bills fan could see that, experience that. When a team gets beaten at home and there's just a couple of pockets of the visiting team fans in the stadium, I think that's some of the most memorable sights
you really
can get
is.
In the NFL.
For you to silence another stadium, that is the best feeling in the world.
Love that. All right, more of this coming up when we return to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Donald Jones and I having a vigorous debate about the way we consume NFL games. And when you step back and think about it, we've got a generational divide here, Donald.
We do.
Fine. I mean, I'm used to dealing with punks like you. I know where you're coming from. No, but we do. And look, I don't think you're wrong. It's just a different way of looking at how we consume games, how we follow the NFL, the way we want to watch games. You know, I get it. I understand it.
I mean, it really is. Like, you talking about people actually listening to games, either the radio broadcast during the game, I really didn't know that happened. I really never paid attention. Like I said, though, I didn't really start going to games until I played in the league.
Well, let me bring up Dan in Lancaster on the phone.
Let's talk to Dan.
Straighten out Donald on this issue, Dan, please.
Hey, Murph, I was at the first game, 1960, August of 1960, when they played against the Boston Patriots. I believe it was.
Did they have TV back then? No, I'm just playing. Go ahead,
played. And I had like whatever at that time was like a boom box. It had to be 18 inches long by 10 inches wide. It must have weighed, taken about 8 batteries.
Big rabbit ears on it.
The first game, and the announcer, and I spoke to you one time about this, I truly believe that Chuck Healy done the first play-by-play of the Buffalo Bills.
I think Van did. I think Chuck Healy might have been on the broadcast, but I'm pretty sure Van did that first game.
Well, I'm going to tell you, Murph, the first game, I was there, and I'm guaranteeing you this. Chuck Healy done the first game, the first half. Van Miller done the second half, and then no one else got another shot until they got the contract at WGR the first time.
Yeah. You might be right about that. I'd have to look into that. That's interesting.
Look into it.
Yeah.
Chuck Healy, I'm sure. He was a good, great sportscaster on sports, but he didn't have the play-by-play ability.
Right. Yeah, you might be onto something there.
I am, Murph. I'm guaranteeing you that. And I had
guaranteeing it
about 45 years.
Okay.
Had a radio every day, every time I went.
Thanks. Let's go to Josh in Buffalo. Hello, Josh. Welcome. You're on the air with us.
Hi, guys. Just speaking to the actual fan experience itself, I'm also a season ticket holder and prefer to watch the games in person. When it comes to the opposing stadiums that you guys were talking about, I got to go to my first away game in Nashville, not this past season, but the season prior. And it must have worked out that because it was Columbus Day weekend, everyone had that Monday off. Up and down the streets of Nashville, seas of Bills fans. just walking down the street, random people you've never seen or met before, yeah, throwing up the high five just for wearing the stuff everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to the game itself, it was as loud for us in there as I felt like it was for them. I remember when Tyrod made that big run on third down, it went nuts. And the couple in front of us, I'll never forget this as long as I live, she turns around and says, is there anyone in Buffalo left? And y'all are the most dedicated, annoying, and obnoxious fans we've ever met. But congratulations on the win. And it was just something I'll never forget. It was awesome. I try to go to one away game every year now solely because of that experience.
It's a good experience on the road, yeah, for fans and players sometimes.
I think that's the issue with the league now having games out in London and, you know, down in Mexico. I know they try to – in Mexico, they'll try to have, like, the Raiders or Houston teams that, you know, the people down in Mexico might cheer for. But, like, when we used to play up in Canada, we never – and even though there was a lot of Bills fans there, it was, like, equal the amount of fans of the opposing team. And so it was like it wasn't a home game for us, you know. So for those teams that they take one of their home games away and now they have to go to London and play a game, it's like people out there are just cheering when something good happens.
Right.
They don't really have they're not a fan of one team. They're just cheering, you know,
yep.
And it kind of stinks as a player.
Sure does. It stinks as a broadcaster.
I'm sure
too.
It does.
All right, when we come back, Sean McDermott, Buffalo Bills new head coach. He's just wrapped up the first week. Just wrapped up the first week of the off-season conditioning program. He'll join us live in studio when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports.
Update on from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills have just about completed their first week of the off-season conditioning program. 4 days here at One Bills Drive as the Bills get their first week in. We're going to hear from head coach Sean McDermott in the next couple of minutes as to what went on this past week and what he looks forward to next week when the Bills get in 4 more days of their off-season conditioning program. Around the NFL, retired Seattle Seahawks running back Marshawn Lynch visited his hometown Oakland Raiders yesterday, and an NFL source says a deal between Lynch and the Raiders eventually will happen. Seahawks general manager John Schneider, asked about the situation, confirmed that the Seahawks and Raiders have had talks over Lynch, who did retire and sat out last year. Schneider also confirmed overnight that the team has discussed trading cornerback Richard Sherman. He said the trade conversations began in February at the Combine. He said he has spoken to Sherman about that situation. The Buffalo Sabres beat Montreal to wrap up their home schedule of the season last night. The Robin Leonard made 31 saves in the Sabres' victory. Rasmus Ristolainen and Tyler Ennis, the goal scorers for Buffalo. Kyle Okposo has missed the last 4 games with an illness. He spent the last 3 days in a Buffalo hospital undergoing a battery of tests to determine an undisclosed illness that has sidelined him for the last week or so. Okposo reportedly in the neurosurgical intensive care unit at Buffalo General Hospital. Sabres play at Florida for their next game Saturday night. They finish up the season Sunday in Tampa Bay. Round 1 of the Masters ongoing. The winds picked up today at Augusta National. It is reflected on the scoreboard. Belgium's Thomas Peters is the leader right now at 5-under par through 10 holes. American Ricky Fowler is at 2-under through 9. American Russell Henley in the clubhouse at 1-under par 71. Dustin Johnson is at the Masters. He has mobility, and his trainer said he could play. His status was in question after Johnson suffered an injury. He fell down the stairs before the start of the Masters, and his status is good enough for him to play. He is, I don't believe he is yet to tee off. So there you go. That is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, and head coach Sean McDermott will be joining us here in studio in a minute. We'll talk with him about some of the issues we've discussed. In the meantime, we should reset our Twitter poll. It deals with how you consume NFL football, and we're kind of all over the place on this one, and I'm beginning to think it is a generational thing, and we'll see if that's reflected in our Twitter poll. Amazon bought the rights to stream Thursday Night Football. What's the best way to follow an NFL game? Not NFL news. You know, it's different. Talking about a game here. 466 votes in. 57% say the best way to follow an NFL game is to watch it on TV. 36% say the best way is to be live in the stadium. 5% say streaming video. 2% say they keep up with social media updates. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. Watch it on TV. That's your choice, Donald, right?
Yeah, definitely. Watch it on TV. You have the big screen TVs, the high definition. Right now you can, you know, just turn to CBS or Fox and watch those games. what is it, ESPN for the Monday night games. I mean, it's always good to watch. Now, I will say this. I do like watching the games on Fox better than I do watching the games on CBS. And I don't know why that is. There's something different about the games on Fox than it is CBS.
You prefer Fox games?
I do prefer.
Really?
I do prefer Fox games.
But that's not AFC. Don't you prefer watching AFC?
It's definitely not AFC, but it's just something else about the broadcast. And I've talked to one of our producers, JJ, about this as well. Something about the broadcast. The game looks totally different on Fox than it does on CBS.
You like the Fox bots. That's it. You like that.
I like the little robot that on the corner. I like that, man. That's cool.
I've often wondered, what on earth does that have to do with this telecast?
Because,
are they trying to make us believe there's little robots involved? I mean,
maybe. Maybe the players are robots.
I think it does dehumanize players, too, really. Are they telling us that these people are not human, that they're robots? Is that what it is?
Oof, I don't know. I hope not.
Think about it. Why do they have robots?
Fox Why do they bots? Have a robot doing that, right?
It doesn't I don't make get
sense
it.
At all. And it's now, how long have they been doing that for some years now?
20 years, 25, 30 years? Yeah. I don't get that.
I don't know. But the game, it just seems more exciting. It's like, I don't know what it is. I can't explain it. We'll talk to JJ once we get him, or after this, once we go into break. And he said the same thing. He can see it as well.
Well, I don't know. Look, I'm watching games basically based on who's playing, what teams are playing.
Right.
Yeah, so I don't care. Fox, CBS, NBC, you know, I don't care. They're all fairly similar productions, you have to say, right?
Fairly similar. Fairly
they all got, you know, replays. They all got play-by-play guy, color guy, sideline person, replays, commercials when you expect them. What,
They need to just put you and Kelso into the CBS broadcast.
I don't want to do
that.
You
guys are the best in the world, I'm telling you.
You're pandering. I don't want to do that. I like what I do. Anyway, if you have thoughts on that, what's the best way to consume, watch an NFL game? The phone line's open at 803-0550. Toll free 1-888-550-2550. Bills head coach Sean McDermott be with us momentarily. What do you make of Marshawn Lynch, your former teammate, Donald? We haven't talked about that yet. We'll talk about it in the next hour with a reporter from Tacoma who covers the Seahawks. But Lynch, you know, we talked about it briefly, I think, late last week. Marshawn talking about not talking about it. He's going to do it, apparently.
Yeah.
Come back into the game after a year off and go to his hometown team in Oakland. What do you make of that?
When I first heard about it, I was a little shocked because I thought when he retired that he was done. You know, he's made a lot of money. He's been very good with his money, so he doesn't need the money. But when you sit back and you really think about it, and I think about my time when he was still here in Buffalo, and you just watch him out there in Seattle – I don't know if I've ever played with or next to a guy that loves playing football like Marshawn does. Like, this dude really loves playing the game. But at the same time, I know his body was beat down playing the game because of his running style. You know, he wasn't a guy who was very elusive or anything. He wanted to run through you. Beast mode. I want to run through you. Run guys over. Take all types of pounding throughout the course of a game. And he felt that. And so he wanted to step back, let his body heal up. But I think now he really is feeling like rejuvenated. He wants to come back, and he wants to do it in Oakland, a team that is leaving Oakland in the next couple of seasons. And he knows that that is a very good team, how prideful he is in that city, being from the city of Oakland. I think he really looks at that and says, man, this is a good team. I can go in here, help this team possibly not just get to the Super Bowl, but win the Super Bowl before they leave and go to Vegas. I think he looks at that as a great opportunity, kind of like LeBron did.
He's 30. He'll be 31 in a couple of weeks, so he'll be 31 when the season begins. He has played 9 seasons, I believe, came to the Bills in 07 and played through 2015, finishing up with Seattle, two different teams. 9 seasons. I don't have his number of carries in front of me. Obviously, he's had an awful lot of NFL carries.
A lot of carries.
And a lot. Well, I'll look it up for you right now. Career carries. Are you ready? 2,144. That's a lot of banging around for
a guy that doesn't run around you. He wants to run straight through you.
You know what I think off the top of my head? I think this is more of a PR signing by the Raiders than it would be a productive player signing. 2,100 carries career, age 31 when the season begins, tough physical style. Can he carry the ball and get some yardage? Sure, he can. He will.
Yeah.
Tough guy to bring down. I saw one stat today where he had broken like twice as many tackles as anybody did. You know, he had a couple of years where he broke like 160 tackles.
Yeah.
And the leading guy to break tackles, these are like advanced analytics stats, last year was like 60 or 70, so twice as many.
Wow.
But for me, the impact is it blunts the negativity that will be surrounding the Raiders in their final couple of years in Oakland. All of a sudden, there'll be a beloved character in the Bay Area, Marshawn Lynch, an Oakland native, on that roster. And, you know, look, I don't know how that's going to play out for them. The lame ducks in Oakland, I don't think it's going to be good. But to have Marshawn Lynch on the roster might take some of the edge off. I think that's what the Raiders are looking at.
You might be right about that. It will take some of the edge off. The team is winning. We talked about this when the whole thing came out that they were leaving, going to Vegas, and they're not leaving right away. And it's like they're still going to play there for another at least two seasons. What's it going to be like? Will people still come to the games? Will people still like the team? And you were saying, like, it's hard because, you know, people know that this team is about to lead them. So do they still come and cheer for the team the same way? Well, you get a guy like Marshawn Lynch who's from that city playing for that team, a guy that, you know, Marshawn Lynch is his whole demeanor and everything that he does and how funny he is to watch and what he does in the media and all of that stuff. It's fun for those people, a guy that is so prideful about that city. You could be right about that. It could be like a PR thing. I don't expect him to come in and carry the load. They have two young running backs, two scat backs. And so it seems like they had Adrian Peterson in there. It seems like they're looking for that big, pounding, bruising back. Marshawn Lynch might be that guy. And for him to be from Oakland, I think it's an added bonus. You also look at – I think this league right now needs a guy like Marshawn to come back and be in this league.
Tell me why.
Because he's just fun. He's just fun. You know,
you know that. You played with him.
Yeah.
And fans, I think,
he's only here so he won't get fined.
But seriously, that Super Bowl performance a couple of years ago and the contentiousness with the media, it did not endear him to a lot of people. And, you know, you say the league needs him back. I think many fans get Marshawn and like him, but I don't think the league likes him, you know, as far because of what he did at the Super Bowl. And, frankly, the media doesn't appreciate Marshawn Lynch.
I don't know if the NFL might like him. They might not like him, the league itself. But they also know that having him in the league gets people to watch those games. And it's the same thing with Oakland, like you were saying. Like, having him on that team will get more people into that stadium. Man, beast mode is coming to Oakland, a city where he's from. I think that will help that team bring more fans into that stadium, as those fans right now are scarred at the fact that they're about to leave.
You see the note that there's some – I didn't dive into it too deeply, but some legal clause that the city of Oakland, whoever administers the stadium, might be able to cancel the Raiders' lease at Oakland Coliseum because of lapses in back payments and maybe just kick them out now.
Ooh.
That'd be interesting.
That
would I almost kind of hope that happens, to be honest with you.
Really?
Just, yeah, you can't leave us. No, you know, you didn't break up with me. I broke up with you, basically. Right? That's what they'd be saying.
You can't fire me. I quit.
Exactly. I kind of look forward to that. I kind of hope that happens, just to let everybody know. All right, we're going to take a break. And when we return, we're going to be live in studio with the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, Sean McDermott. He'll be joining us in studio to talk a little bit about the off-season conditioning program. That's coming up next. Sean McDermott, Bills head coach. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. We're live at One Bills Drive, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined by Bills head coach Sean McDermott. Your first visit on set since the day you were hired.
I know.
It's been a couple of months.
A lot has changed since I've been here.
You got a staff?
Got a staff.
Has that changed? You're in the middle of the organized team activity, the off-season workouts now.
That's it. Got some clothes. I've got some
finally got some stuff, right? They give you a bigger office, maybe some couches and everything.
Tell me about the first 3 days this week, 4 days really, of the off-season workout. How it's gone, how the attendance been, and what do you think you've accomplished here this week?
Yeah, it's going great. Attendance has been outstanding. We just finished basically our first week, as you said, and just basically convened our team meeting to end the week and cut the guys loose for the weekend. So great job really overall with the attendance, great effort. Eric Ciano and his staff in the weight room have done a tremendous job this first week. And then Sean Gibson in the training room with getting guys back on basically the field, if you can be on the field, which we really can't, but from a conditioning standpoint, getting stronger. And then the coaches did a phenomenal job in the classroom with the young men.
Now, the rules are right now you guys can't, like, go on the field, obviously, but even in the weight room with them?
We're not allowed to be in the weight room. It's totally split, you know, classroom, and then the other portion of it is really strength and conditioning's part.
Right. So what do you get, an hour and a half maybe in the classroom with these players?
Yeah,
week?
Roughly about an hour and a half. You could take all of the time. You get 4 hours max in the building, and so you could – you know, take really all four of it if you wanted to. But right now is a time for us not only to lay the foundation of this scheme, but also to get stronger and to get in better shape at this point.
How much of this week for you in the classroom, for your staff really, has been not just X's and O's, but this is who we are, this is how we work, this is what's expected? How much of that did you have to spend time on that this week?
Yeah, well, that's where it started. From Monday morning, we had an 8 o'clock team meeting, and we went through some guidelines, and this is what we expect. And we were talking about this earlier, but, you know, it's like having children. You want to impart everything you know on them at one time in one setting, but that wouldn't be conducive from a learning and takeaway standpoint. So what we've tried to do is go with the approach of less is more at this point. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, outline what's important to us and really just build alignment around how we expect things done, not only on the field, but at times, more importantly, off the field.
And do you see that after 4 days? I know it's only 4 days, but do you see guys maybe do you have to correct guys? Hey, we talked about this. This is how we do things now, not what you may have done somewhere else or even here in the past.
Right, yeah. So we always want to celebrate what we see in terms of celebrate the standard. When we get it, we're going to celebrate it, and we're going to have fun around that part of it. But when it's not up to par, when it's not up to the standard, the daily standard, then we're going to correct within that context. And so guys are always known. We're always building that alignment around, hey, what's important, what's expected, how do they expect it done, what time is it supposed to be done? And so that's an ongoing part of the off season.
Now, I know in your press conference you talked about you're new to the team, right? And so you have new guys on the team. Obviously, everybody has to get to know each other. Did you do any of those, like, elementary school, hi, I'm Sean McDermott, I like love movies.
Icebreakers, yeah. Actually, we just finished a couple of them with the team. You know, it's kind of, hey, you know, name that teammate, right?
Yeah,
it sounds elementary as you discussed, but you know, I'm just a big believer in chemistry and culture, and those go hand in hand. And in order to love someone else, you got to get to know them, and so spending time with teammates, and also that's not just specific to the team. It's the team. Around the team, meaning everyone in the building. That goes for Rick in the mailroom and Nadine in the cafeteria to the whole building. So we're all on one team.
How did you play name that teammate? Did you point at guys and say, who is that? Or did you read a resume and say,
homework.
Who is he?
Yeah.
Homework? How'd you do that?
Well, we just naturally, the offense, defense, and special teams kind of divided them up, and the guys had fun with it. I hope they had fun with it. It seemed like they did. And so that's, you know, that's, it's important that they know also where to go for support, that everyone in the building is here, and we're here to help them. And so mind, body, and spirit, they know where to go and find help.
With Sean McDermott, the Bills head coach, a couple of minutes left with Coach. Talking about chemistry, you had an opportunity this week to get together for dinner with really the all-time Buffalo Bills team, the important elements of that team, a couple of Hall of Famers involved and a couple of other great players, and you had dinner. What was that all about? Why did you put that together?
Well, I just felt it was important to reach out to our alumni and let them know that they're all important. And, of course, I would love to have done it with everyone. Just, you know, it's hard to do that. But, you know, wanted to get out and find out what it means to put the helmet on, find out what it means to win in this city, what it looks like, and just better understand our situation so that I can convey all of that and build it into what we're doing. And then part of it was, you know, building relationships with our alumni. And then finally was, you know, verifying some things as a coach. I'm always trying to learn, and those guys provided a great learning environment for me to take some notes and to reaffirm some things for myself and then look forward to putting those into action here.
Some pretty big personalities. Were you even able to get anything done?
Yeah, I listened a lot, and I just sat back. I mean, just from a sports fan standpoint, to be in that room was humbling. 40-plus Pro Bowls, X amount of Hall of Famers in there, and again, just to the biggest takeaway was the amount of love that these men have for one another, and the bond that they've created will last a lifetime. It's just phenomenal.
What did you learn from that group, that all-star, star-studded group, that you can apply to this Bills team moving forward?
Well, everything that happened in that room has to stay in that room as we...
Oh, you're in Las Vegas.
That's it. Well, no,
it
was an interesting dynamic. Really neat to watch the players interact. And again, I just felt like, you know, I was a fly on the wall just watching teammates back together again, from Cornelius Bennett to Jim. And, and you know, guys that Jim lives here and Cornelius doesn't live here, and so just need to watch them reconnect and tell stories and of what happened on the field and the different games and how they, you know, at one game in Pittsburgh, Daryl Talley's father was in the stadium and they were made an announcement over the PA system while the team was stretching and how little things like that that the players remember just absolutely amazes me over the years. So
one of the things that you've said throughout this process is how many other coaches you've talked to throughout the league, guys that have done this before. Do you still do this now? Every step that you go, you're in mini, you'll get into mini camp soon and then training camp. How's this? Like, how should I do this? Do you do it every step?
I'm a big believer in learning and continuing to grow. I mean, for me personally, I don't think you'll ever get there. You chase it, right? But I don't think you ever get there, wherever there is, right. Wisdom-wise. And so I'm always trying to learn and trying to grab a piece of competitive advantage for myself and our staff and this football team. And I did that last week at the owners' meetings in terms of I really took the approach, Donald, going in there and saying, listen, I've got to take the approach that I've never coached a day in my life. And anytime I, you know, just met a coach for the first time, even if it was for 5 minutes on the sidewalk, walking to a meeting or from a meeting, hey, coach, you know, how did you do it? What would you do differently? And I wrote it all down. And so it took me 2 days to kind of debrief from those meetings because of that. But, you know, absolutely, I take that approach from day one, really.
Have you had a chance to talk to the arch nemesis up in New England? Have you had a chance to Bill Belichick?
We haven't. I didn't get a chance to meet with Coach Belichick there, and certainly respect everything he does up there. But I've studied, you know, what they do, and I've got have had some correspondence with guys on their staff before. So, you know, they just do a phenomenal job.
Last question for you, Coach. You've been here close to 3 months now. What's the most surprising thing you've learned about the Bills or Buffalo in the 3 months you've been here?
Well, I would honestly say just the quality of the people in this town, in this building, at One Bills Drive in particular, and you know whether it's in the building or outside the building, the genuine quality and authenticity of the people in this town, whether you're in the South Towns or the North Towns. I know there's a little bit of a rivalry there, but just how important this team is to them and yet how genuine their love is for this team, whether it's first generation, second generation, and that just speaks volumes about what's happened here over the years, going all the way back to the 90s, and so we've got to recapture that, but we really appreciate the support. I know me and my family appreciate it, and the staff does as well.
Coach, thanks. Gotta let you go. Thanks very much.
We do.
Good being with you guys.
Coach Sean McDermott in studio with us. We'll take a break. Come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. And again, our thanks to head coach Sean McDermott for stopping by. Happy to have him here. Donald, what did you think about what McDermott had to say? What struck you? Anything?
The icebreakers. You know, he's big on learning guys' personalities and learning everything about you. And that's not just for him to the players, but the players to learn each other. You know, when you're on a team and you're traveling, you see each other every single day, you know, you need to really learn things about what those guys like. And it should never be like cliques on a team. That is not a good team. Everybody should be able to go. I should be able to go and hang out with this person just as well as I can go and hang out with this person. There should never really be cliques, and you should know things about each other.
So you played, and you played on offense.
Yep.
Could you name everybody on the defensive side of the ball on your Bills teams?
I could.
By face?
I can name them by face, yeah.
Okay. Can most players do that?
Maybe not. It really depends on the player, how outgoing you are. You have some guys that are not really that outgoing, you know,
and so some guys
just stay to themselves. Right, and then guys are there for a little bit of time.
Right.
So, but if you're a guy who's been on the team for a couple of years, and it's hard to learn those guys that have come in and then leave, and we know how this league is. You know, they'll sign a guy for a week, and then he's gone. And so it's hard sometimes learn guys, but there are like a nucleus of guys that are on a team. You need to know all of those
guys. Did playing special teams, which crosses over in offense and defense, did that help you get to know guys on the defensive side of the ball?
That really helped me get to know guys because I was, especially in my rookie year, I was very good on special teams. And so I would get guys from the offensive and defensive side of the ball that would come and talk to me about how good I was doing. So we would talk just be about that anyway.
Let's all talk about how good I'm doing.
I mean, they would say, because I was a rookie and I was undrafted, like, yo, you're doing a good job. Just keep doing what you're doing. The coaches like what you're doing. But then because you have offensive and because you have that crossover, you do get to talk to those guys.
And how about – it's one thing to recognize them by face and know their names. How about knowing guys? Did you always feel like you knew guys on the opposite side of the ball or across the locker room? Or?
I didn't always know guys. I mean, it's hard to learn things about every single guy and know their history and all of that stuff because you typically – for me, I was cool with the receivers – Fred and Marshawn and those guys, Fitz because he was the quarterback. On the defensive side of the ball, I knew a lot of the DBs. We went up against each other.
Right.
But you don't really know everything about everybody. It's hard to do on a team of so many guys.
So an exercise, like Coach McDermott said, I think he said they did it today, right, at the team meeting?
Yeah, they did.
Know your teammate?
Yeah. I'm Donald Jones. I like romance movies.
And walks on the beach.
I like to eat macaroni and cheese and chicken.
Long walks.
Right.
But – that would help, right?
It does. I mean, things like that do help because it's an icebreaker and it's funny. And guys are like, what? Like, we really about to do this? But you end up having fun with it. You know, you end up learning things about guys that you never – if guys are open about themselves, and that's what you need, guys that don't really care, and they'll just say anything, you need that on your team. And that's what you're trying to get to, where everybody's just comfortable with sharing things with everybody.
Yeah, that's team building. That's culture, right?
It is.
It's not all about cracking the whip and – working, it's now. Who are we? What is that guy like over there across the room?
I think it's huge for a team because I feel like obviously you need to have talent on the team to win games and go into the playoffs, win a Super Bowl. But it's not always the most talented teams that win every single year. It's the teams that really come together. Obviously, you have to be healthy at a certain point in the year. All of that stuff matters. You got to have talent. But if you can come together really as a team and really have that bond, that brotherhood. And you trust the people next to you, and you trust the person. You know, I'm on defense, but I trust that offensive team because I know he can get his job done. I'm not doubting anybody on that side of the ball. We go out. We do everything together. Those are the teams that win.
All right, what about the other thing? We didn't have a whole lot of time with Coach McDermott, but the dinner he had Tuesday night. Was it Tuesday? Yes. I believe it was Tuesday, right, with the all-time greats, you know, the Super Bowl greats, Thurman Thomas and Steve Tasker and Daryl Talley and Bruce Smith, Jim Kelly. Am I forgetting anybody? I think that was it. What about that?
Cornelius Bennett.
Oh, Cornelius Bennett, yeah. What about that? I asked Coach, what did you get out of that? And he said, you know, what happened at dinner stays at dinner. But what would you imagine he would get out of that kind of thing?
You see Thurm is kind of short in that picture, standing next to those guys. He maybe should have sat down. He's probably listening to it. He's going to text in.
Text Donald.
Like the short Santa Claus.
I wonder what Coach McDermott got out of that.
I think, you know, they probably talked about how they came together as a team and they probably gave him the best steakhouses in the city. but they really probably talked about how they came together as a team, different things that he could probably do to help this team come together. I don't know what else he could get from a meeting
thing,
like that.
This, you know, which came first, the camaraderie and the chemistry and the bond between that group or the winnings? If you don't win, you don't stay together that long anyway.
Right.
And you don't get a chance to build that sort of chemistry.
Now, was it the same way back then? I mean, you didn't have free agency like you do now.
No, it was different, and teams didn't move as well. But if that group didn't win, they're not going to be around. Right. They're not going to play with each other the long time they did. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I'm not finding fault here either. I just don't know the answer. You know, does chemistry come first or do wins come first? I think it's kind of probably a little bit of both, a little bit of each.
I think it has to happen kind of at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, because like you said, if you don't win games, guess what? The team won't be here. And if you're not playing good as a player individually – you won't be here. If the coach is not doing his job, he won't be here, right? So you have to play well on the field, and you have to win games. And if you win games, even in this day, though, like winning games, the more games you win, the more guys end up leaving.
Right.
Because they're going to go ahead and go get paid by another team because you're on a team that's winning.
Right.
It's so different from those guys playing back in the 90s, 80s and 90s.
Coach McDermott said the thought that occurred to me even before they had that dinner when we got word of that dinner, love to be a fly on the wall in there.
Oh, yeah.
To hear some of the stories, to hear, if you drill down, and, you know, we have the benefit of having Thurman on the show a lot, Steve Tasker, obviously. We've had Bruce. We've had all of them on the show from time to time, Jim Kelly and others. but you'd like to be able to drill down and get them unguarded and unfiltered and get them really talking about, as Coach said, what was it like to win in this town? I mean, that really is the last group that won consistently and for this franchise. What was that like? What was the atmosphere like? Not so much can we replicate that, but just what did it feel like when the Bills were winning, going to Super Bowls? I'd love to hear what they've had to say about
You've been around all of those guys at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been around all of them at the same time. I've been around all of them individually. And each individual one has a different personality. Most of those guys have big personalities, though. So I can't even imagine being sitting there. It probably was like a roast, like just sitting back and forth, just going back and forth. And Coach McDermott sitting there listening like, all right, guys, can we really get something done now?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Those guys are all, you're right, huge personalities. Big egos, but huge personalities, funny personalities. I mean, Thurman's as funny as they come, really.
Yeah, he is.
You know?
But I think ultimately, though, because those guys are the all-time Bills great players, like in the history of this team, this franchise, they want to see this franchise turn around. I mean, those guys, Thurm, Jim Kelly, Andre Reed, Daryl Talley, you see them on social media like during the season. Those guys are upset when the team is not playing well, the team is not winning. I think ultimately they want to help in any way. And I'm not talking about coaching. We get so many people say, these guys need to come back and coach. No, but they want to help in any way that they can to get this thing turned around because this is their franchise.
Yeah. And the last thing about Coach McDermott's visit, I hope you heard it. If you didn't hear it on the show, it'll be up on our website later on. You can download it and listen to it. But just the how tightly controlled these conditioning weeks are.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, 4 hours per day. I think I had the rules the other day. We were talking about it. They can only do 4 hours. They can only have players in the building for 4 hours for a specific number of days. It's part of that time, let's say roughly half of that time, spent on the field in conditioning work and in the weight room in conditioning work, and that's important. And the rest of the day spent in meeting time. And I like the fact, what I've heard from Coach McDermott both Monday at his news conference and here today, that he seems determined not to overload these players with information. He didn't throw a gigantic digital playbook at him and say, here's our offense, learn it. You know, it seems like they're slowly moving him through the process, and here's what you need to know now, and here's how we work, and here are the ground rules for what we do, and they're going to do it in stages, which it seems to me is a really, really smart way to do it.
You know, as much as he wants to throw everything at all of these players right now, like here's we need to put in the entire playbook, he knows it's not the best thing because you won't pick up anything if you try to give them everything at one time. If you do this thing in stages, you really do have time. Like, it's the spring. You're still early in the spring, you know? So he has a plan. I'm sure he has a plan, and he's sticking to his plan. He's not, like, veering off of his plan. And I'm sure in his plan it was like, okay, week one, we want to put in this much stuff. Week two, we want to put in this much stuff. And he's sticking to that instead of just, I'm here, I had these guys here, I need to throw everything at them.
And what makes that notable, I think, is, let's face it, this is a first-year, first-time head coach.
Yeah.
He's never done this before.
Mm-mm.
But he had, I think, the wisdom to know that, you know, he's not one of these guys, oh, I finally got my chance to be a head coach. I've seen guys like this coach here. Finally got a chance to be a head coach. I'm going to change the culture on day one and do everything on day one. Well, no. I mean, to his credit, I think Coach McDermott appears to have the wisdom to know that you can't do that. That you've got to do it in stages. It's a learning. This is what a good teacher does.
Exactly.
You don't walk into geometry class the first day of your sophomore year in high school and they throw everything at you and say, you got to know this right away. No, it's introduced in stages.
Right.
And coaching is teaching. This coach realizes, it appears, again, from the outside looking in, has realized that it's a process. In fact, it says that in the wall.
It does.
Respect
say that on the
process.
Wall. Respect the process.
Right? I mean, but it's good. It's good teaching, I think.
I think it's great teaching. I think he's going about this the right way. He's doing it in stages. He's sticking to his plan. I think that is a big thing for him to stick to his plan. And he's being smart about it. He's talking to everybody, not just coaches. He's now had a meeting with, you know, former players.
Yeah.
And it's about so many different things. He's talking to coaches about, you know, how do you do different things at different stages? And he's still going to talk about that. He's still going to talk to those coaches, as he said during our interview. Then he goes and talks to, you know, Hall of Famers about what it's like to win in this city and what did you guys do? How did you bond? How did you come together as a team? I mean, he's trying to really talk to so many different people so that he does things the right way.
I love being around not just coaches, but people who
want to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who know that they don't know everything.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been people, coaches here, who walk in and it's like, oh, I got this down. First time coaches who've never done it. I'm not going to name names, but you don't have to go too far back in Bill's history. But first-time coaches who came in and, like, I got it, the secret formula. I know exactly what I'm doing. I love being around people, anybody, in any walk of life, but especially coaches who acknowledge they don't have all the answers. They can always learn. There might be a better way, and they kind of soak up information from other people when it comes to doing their job. I love that about him.
You're definitely not going to have all the answers, and I feel like every coach, even the coaches that have won, even the coaches that have won a lot, they have – a different formula. Every one of them has a different formula and a different way about doing things, you know. So he wants to talk to all of these different guys, get all of their formulas, and then create his own formula for winning, you know. Yeah. But it's smart for him to talk to everybody about what it is that they do.
Coach McDermott just joined us in studio. If you missed it, it'll be up on our website soon. If you heard it and you want to comment, phone lines open, 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-552-550. We can also revisit this in our Twitter poll today. Deals with the way you consume NFL football games. Amazon, you may have seen the news this week. Amazon bought the rights, $50 million, to stream Thursday Night Football. Our Twitter poll, what's the best way to follow an NFL game? What do you think? What's your favorite way? 550 votes in via Twitter. 58% of you say watching on television is the best way to follow an NFL football game. 35% of you say in attendance, in the stadium. 35% say that. 5% say streaming video. 2% say social media updates. I bet if we could break it down, we can't. Mm-hmm. If we could break it down in terms of like demographics, age, yeah. I bet it'd be pretty interesting. I think streaming and social media would be the lower end of the age demographic, and in stadium attendance and watching on TV would be at the upper end. Would you agree?
I would think so. I think most people still like to watch the game. Some people like to go to the games. As far as like being at home, if you had a choice between just watching on TV and the internet, right now it's still TV, but I think it's moving towards the internet as we go, as the years keep on moving. Moving along, we are moving more to people streaming games on their phones, on their iPads, or any other device they have. Computers. I just think it's moving that way.
All right. We are 3 weeks away from the first round of the NFL draft. 3 weeks from today, April 27th. We got to talk about the draft more on the show because it's coming and there's mock drafts out there and draft experts. But we want to spend a little bit of time today looking at the draft from a historical standpoint. Mm-hmm. With a couple of pieces, ESPN. Did an analytics piece, stacking the best classes in NFL draft history. And it's pretty interesting. And one Bills draft class is in the top 10. It's ninth overall. That would be the 1985 Buffalo Bills draft with a couple of Hall of Famers in that draft. Bruce Smith, NFL's all-time sack leader. Andre Reed, also in the Hall of Fame. Is that the Bills' all-time draft, 1985? What do you think of that? Give us a call. Let us know. 803-0550, the number, toll-free, 1-888-552-550, or via Twitter. If you get two Hall of Famers out of one draft class, you're doing pretty good.
You're doing pretty good. If you get two Hall of Famers out of – yeah, you're doing pretty good. You did very good that draft.
So there are others, though, and that's ninth ranked in the NFL on ESPN's analytics look at the draft classes. That is the ninth. The number one is the 1975 Dallas Cowboys. Hall of Fame defensive tackle Randy White, second overall pick. Five members of that class in the Cowboys became Pro Bowlers, including Randy White, the linebacker Thomas Hollywood Henderson, Bob Bruning, tackle Pat Donovan, guard Herbert Scott. Five started the Cowboys' Super Bowl win. So there's some good draft classes out there. It's almost like lightning, I think, sometimes, you know. They've got the Bills' 1985 draft ranked as the ninth best draft class overall in NFL history. Let me go down a little bit of that draft. Obviously, we know Bruce Smith, first rounder, first overall pick. Mm-hmm. Derek Burrows came in the first round that year, right in the middle of the draft, 14th overall. A defensive back from Memphis who was a good player. His career cut short by cervical stenosis. He was not able to play three or four years in the league. He was on his way to becoming a very good player. Mark Trainowitz came in the second round from Nebraska, big offensive lineman. Not much there. Chris Burkett came in the second round as well, wide receiver from Jackson State back in 1985.
A lot of picks that year.
He did. There are 12 rounds in the draft, too. Oh, yeah. Frank Reich, third rounder that year. Not a Hall of Famer, but a pretty important figure in franchise history. Hal Garner, special teamer, linebacker, was a third rounder. Andre Reed, we talked about him. Mm-hmm. Dale Hellestray, who stayed in the league for a long time as a long snapper, came in that 85 draft. Jimmy Teal, a wide receiver. Mike Hamby, defensive end, who played and I think actually still lives in the area. Ronnie Pitts, you know that name? Mm-mm. Fox Sports, Ron Pitts, defensive back, played at UCLA, played at Orchard Park High School, went to UCLA, had a nice NFL career with a couple of different teams, the Green Bay Packers and the Buffalo Bills. Ron Pitts came in the seventh round that year. I'm looking at the rest of the names. I mean, I remember some of them, but nobody really notable. That's a good draft. Mm-hmm. A couple of Hall of Famers, Frank Reich in that draft class, guys who've been in, stayed in the league for a long time, like Dale Hellestray, even as a long snapper, Derek Burrows, a first-round pick. 1985 Buffalo Bills draft. ESPN argues it's the greatest draft in Bills history. It's hard to argue that.
And they have them ninth of all
ninth drafts? Of all time. Any team.
And the Cowboys are?
75 Cowboys are the number one draft class. Okay. I don't know. It's hard to rank them, I think. I think it's hard to rank them, but ESPN ranks
I mean, what are they ranking by? How many Hall of Famers you have?
No, it did a completing analytic. They had the Football Reference Approximate Value Metric, measure of a player's value to his team based on game appearances, game starts, Pro Bowl, All-Pro, meaningful stats. You know, it's a metric. It's an analytic metric. And this is just since 1967 when the AFL and NFL started drafting together. Cowboys number one, the 71 Pittsburgh Steelers ranked number two. Eight Super Bowl starters, including Jack Hamm, Mike Wagner, Dwight White in that draft class. Saints of 81, running back George Rogers in that class. The Bears of 75, Walter Payton. He'll make any draft look good.
Yeah, he will.
pretty good draft. How about 1965? This is pre-common draft era. 1965 Chicago Bears draft. Hall of Famers Gale Sayers and Dick Butkus, 3-4 overall. That's a pretty good draft class. 1977 New York Jets was ranked fifth by this ESPN study. Wesley Walker, okay. Offensive tackle Marvin Powell. Joe Klecko, pretty good players. Mm-hmm. I like the Bills better than some of these drafts, I got to say, as you go through it.
Now, I wonder if, you know, obviously the Bills had the two Hall of Famers. You have other players that played a long time in this league. But the fact that, you know, they didn't win Super Bowls, you think that goes into why they have other teams above them?
I don't know. It says game appearances, starts, Pro Bowls, All-Pro selections.
Yeah.
68 Oakland Raiders, interesting. Kenny Stabler, Hall of Famer. Art Shell, Hall of Famer in that one. When you get two Hall of Famers, that's a notable draft class. We talked about the 85 Bills, ninth overall. Baltimore Ravens in 1996, the first two picks in team history. Hall of Fame tackle Jonathan Ogden and linebacker Ray Lewis, who will be in the Hall of Fame, certainly.
Yeah, he will.
83 Dolphins, Dan Marino, again, makes any draft look good. Mark Clayton came that year, Reggie Roby, their great punter. These are good draft classes. Anyway, they've got the Bills as the Bills' 85 draft with Andre Reed and
I wonder
Bruce Smith is the best Bills draft pick of draft class of all time and the ninth best overall in NFL history.
I wonder of, you know, teams maybe within the last 10 years who would have the best draft classes. You'd have to obviously take away the Hall of Fame stuff, but you still have the Pro Bowls and the Super Bowls and, you know, all pro players. I'm sure there are some teams right now that would stack up with these teams.
Like who? Who do you got in mind?
I would have to really sit down and look at all of the, all of the teams and see.
Nobody comes to mind off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's tough to do right now without sitting down looking at it.
3 weeks away from first round of the NFL draft. Who are the best Bills first round picks all time? Again, since the common draft era, some good ones. Obviously, O.J. Simpson, Hall of Famer in 1969. Joe DeLaMalur, Hall of Famer in 1973. I think would rank on most people's list as one of their best first rounders. Jim Kelly in 83. Mm-hmm. Do you know they chose a player two picks before Jim Kelly?
Really?
Tony Hunter. Tight end. Exactly.
Who?
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, it happens like that.
Yeah.
You know, it definitely happens like that. But I think, as I was just talking about teams now, it's so hard to think about it because the guys move around so much. In this free agency world we live in now, in this NFL, the guys move so much that you don't even remember, oh, he was drafted by this team.
Yeah.
And now he became a great player on this team. So it's just so hard to tell. Back then, you're talking about guys that played – a lot of them on just one team for most of their careers.
Bruce Smith, obviously, number one overall pick, 1985, part of that draft class. Our buddy Reuben Brown, first-round pick in 1995. Did you know he was a first-rounder?
Yeah, I did. Okay. Oh, he made it known.
Mike Williams, offensive tackle, Texas. Fourth overall pick, 2002. Maybe the worst.
Who?
First round pick of the Bills in history. How did that happen? Your buddy Marshawn Lynch, first rounder, right? 2007, 12th overall. Here's a nominee for the worst first round pick in Bills history, Aaron Maben, 2009. Man. You played with him.
I did play with Aaron Maben. And we are cool now, good friends. He's a
you
very good
cool
artist.
All along?
No, I mean, we were definitely cool when he played here. He's a great dude. He just didn't really pan out as a first round draft. I remember when he was drafted though. Obviously, I was still in college, and I remember the big story was he played like 1 year. He had one hot year at Penn State, and then he got drafted. And he was a smaller player at his position, and it was like, can he hold up? And it didn't pan out for him. And I remember when I got here as a rookie, he was playing on special teams with me, and it just wasn't good.
It's bad. All right, we're going to break. We've got more coming up. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills players have wrapped up the first week of their off-season conditioning program. They've got another week to go coming up next week. The off-season conditioning plan for the Bills includes these first 2 weeks with 4 hours in the complex, on the field, and in meeting rooms. Head coach Sean McDermott discussed that with us, and you can hear that entire interview coming up a little bit later on. Or actually, you can hear it. Maybe we should play it again. You can hear that entire interview on our website at BuffaloBills.com. Around the NFL, Marshawn Lynch visiting the Raiders yesterday, and ESPN reports that a deal between the retired Seattle Seahawks running back and the Oakland Raiders will eventually happen. Lynch, of course, is a native of Oakland and looking to come back after taking last year off. Seahawks general manager John Schneider confirmed that the Raiders and Seahawks have had talks about Lynch. Schneider also confirms that the team has discussed trading cornerback Richard Sherman. He says the trade conversations began in February at the scouting combine in Indy. He said he has spoken to Sherman about the situation. Buffalo Sabres ready to finish up the season on the road with a couple of games in Florida. The Sabres play at Florida on Saturday night. They beat Montreal last night to wrap up the home portion of the schedule. Rasmus Ristolainen, Tyler Ennis scoring goals. Robin Leonard with 31 saves in that game. Kyle Okposo has missed the last 4 games, and the report on Okposo is that he has spent the last 3 days in a hospital undergoing a number of tests to determine what's the cause of his undisclosed illness that has him sidelined for more than a week. Reports are that Okposo was in the neurosurgical intensive care unit at Buffalo General Hospital, and no further information available on that. Sabres play at Florida Saturday night. And the Masters, the first round of the Masters teed off. They have some heavy wins there. Right now, your leader on the course is Kevin Chappell. Chappell is through 17 holes, and he is at 3 under par, so the scores are not going especially low at the Masters, first round of the Masters at Augusta National coming up today. It is the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We are live at One Bills Drive, and we talked about the news on Marshawn Lynch visiting the Raiders. Joining us right now, not joining us yet, getting ready to join us, we're going to talk to a reporter from the Tacoma News Tribune about the Marshawn Lynch story, the Richard Sherman story. The Sherman story, we talked about Marshawn last hour, Donald. The Richard Sherman story is interesting. Mm-hmm. I guess I have to put myself in the surprise category that they would entertain thoughts about trading him. What do you think that's all about?
You know, I think that GMs always entertain the thought about trading anybody on their team, aside from franchise quarterbacks. I think they really look at everybody. They evaluate. When they say they're evaluating everything every single year, I think they really do that. And they'll entertain. If a team is going to give you what you would want for a guy like that, I think that they would entertain that every single time. It doesn't ever shock me when I hear this guy is on the trading block. It just never shocks me because this league, that's how it goes. And then the Seahawks themselves, them and the Patriots might make the most transactions out of all teams in the league. Like, they trade and bring guys in all year. It's just – it's crazy how that team and the Patriots work.
Makes me wonder I don't mean this in a negative sense, but who do the Seahawks think they are? I mean,
yeah.
I don't mean, you know, that, like, who do you think you are? I mean, if you don't have Richard Sherman and you've spent a year without Marshawn Lynch, I wonder what they consider to be like the building blocks of that franchise, the core players of that franchise, yeah. Seattle. Who do you think they're looking at there? Is it all Russell Wilson, or what do you think?
I think, you know, when you look at this draft class and you look at it, how deep it is at the cornerback position, you look at Richard Sherman, how much money he's making, they could obviously get him off their books. If they traded him away, you're talking about trading him for some high draft picks, you know, so they would pick up more draft picks, get him off their books, and they can get a cornerback probably they feel like can come in and fit in their system. Richard Sherman is a great player in this league. He's made a lot of plays over the past couple of years. He has been one of the building blocks for that defense. But at the same time, if you can get cheaper and get one of these rookies to come in and play in that cover three type of scheme and do what he can do, I think they'll entertain it.
And so where does Richard Sherman go? And, you know, you hear the rumblings about the Patriots. Really? After paying all that money to
I guess they have it.
To Stephon Gilmore? It's one thing to have it, but do you need him?
You're right.
Do you need to spend that much money on corners?
And what do you do with Malcolm Butler? I mean, if they would really trade for Richard Sherman, it really goes to show how they feel about Malcolm Butler. They already paid Stephon Gilmore instead of paying Malcolm Butler. Then he was on the trading block for Brandon Cooks. Then they ended up just getting Brandon Cooks without even trading him away. Now you're talking about bringing Richard Sherman over. I mean, man, they just want to get rid of Malcolm Butler. And he's been the guy that's made some plays for him over the last couple of years, actually made the play to win them the Super Bowl. So, it seems like in the Patriots' land right now, they can see that their window is closing. As much as Tom Brady talks about, you know, I can play into my mid-40s, well, we'll see about that. You know, we know that nobody can beat Father Time, Mother Time. Nobody can beat that, right? And so you can't play at this level but for so long. And so we want to get as much talent in here so we can keep on winning while you're here, Tom Brady. And so it feels like that's what they're trying to do.
Back to Richard Sherman. He has had some sideline issues with coaches, right?
Yeah.
Well-publicized blow-ups with coaches. Defense coordinator Chris Richard, one of them. And you wonder if that plays into it. I mean, we've heard his teammates, a couple of them, including Hauschka a week or two ago, kind of defend Richard Sherman, say he's a good teammate. But you wonder if he's just sort of worn out his welcome in there in Seattle?
His demeanor?
I don't know.
They might get tired of hearing him, you know, talk about the different things. He's a smart guy, and he does bring a lot of attention to himself and to that franchise with some of the things that he will say in a press conference, trying to stick up for players and, you know, trying to, you know, take a certain stance on different issues throughout the country, social issues, whatever it is. He will take a hard stance on it, and he might have worn out his welcome. I think it's more about how much money he's making right now. And if they can get cheaper and get draft picks on top of that, then they'll entertain it.
Let us know what you think. Phone lines open 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Our Twitter poll remains up. We can re-engage on that. Amazon getting ready to stream live video of Thursday Night Football. From your perspective, from a fan's perspective, what's the best way to follow an NFL game? What do you think? Donald and I discussed it at length earlier on. Our Twitter poll has 585 votes in. 58% say watching on TV is the best way, 35% say live in the stadium, 5% say streaming video, 2% say social media updates. That's not going anywhere, which do you think that says something about our audience or something about the social media? There's no way social media compares with watching a game on TV or in person.
You know, it might say something about the demographics of our audience, but on Twitter we know, I think a lot of people do. First of all, I want to know if people really know what we're saying when we're asking the question. We're not asking you, like, are you watching the game on Twitter? Because I do think there are a lot of people that will go to Twitter for different news updates and things that are going on, especially if you're at the game. You don't know what's happening on the sideline. You don't know that so-and-so just got hurt. You don't know if they're going to come back. And so people will go to their phone. Even you have people that listen to headphones in the stadium, but a lot of people, especially in my generation, will go to their phone because there's always going to be an update from someone in the media saying so-and-so has just gone down, and they'll give you an update on what's going to happen moving forward.
On another game or the game you're interested in?
The game you're interested in, another game.
You can't tell watching the game so-and-so just went down, so-and-so's out?
Well, it's not even just that so-and-so – I mean, sometimes you might not even notice that a player has gone down and is not in there unless it's a star player, your quarterback or a star wide receiver or something like that. But even if that person goes down, you're trying to figure out if he's coming back in that game or not. You know, and you'll have members of the media that say, you know, sources saying
– Yeah, by the way, they don't know, the guys in the press box. You know what they know? They know what's being announced over the press box.
Over the press box, you're right.
You know, Stephon Gilmore has a ankle injury. His return is questionable.
Right.
Big deal. I mean, you can't – if you don't get it by watching the game yourself, any broadcaster can report it. There's no insight gleaned, I wouldn't think, from a tweet that says that, is there? Oh, Gilmore's
– Probably not.
You know,
there's no other
there's
insight.
There's no extra insight.
No.
There's
I mean,
no
they're
diagnosis
getting,
from the press box.
They're getting their info from
– Yeah.
From the announcers. Yeah, you're right. But people in the stadium will go to their phone and read and see what's going on.
I don't get it.
It's just a different – let me tell you, it's funny because, you know, I spend a lot of time on my phone. And not to put you, obviously, in the same category as my grandfather. It might sound like I am, but I'm not. But my grandfather hates when I'm on my phone. Like, we'll be sitting on the couch watching TV, and he's like, why are you on your phone? And I'm like, Papa, like, you know, I read a lot of different things on the phone. I'm reading articles. I'm keeping up on the news on Twitter. I mean, I'm doing a lot of different things. And he's like, put the phone down. Put the phone down. And I'm like, it's not that serious. It's going to be okay. I'm still paying attention to what's going on
no,
the TV.
Not.
I am.
Your attention is divided.
Nah.
Yeah.
I mean, technically it is divided, but I'm still paying attention to what's happening.
How about paying attention to your grandfather? Maybe he wants to talk.
He would talk if he wanted to talk.
Maybe he wants you to talk. Maybe he wants to have dialogue, like human might. Interaction.
He might, but, you know.
He's right.
I don't know.
I know, and
as
he's
we
right.
As we keep moving on, just more and more people, the phone can do so much. It's like a computer, and the more it can do, the more people will be on this phone.
Well, it's their loss, and I think it's a problem. Anyway, and look, I see the way it's going, and I see it in, you know, my own friends and family, but, you know, you have to put the phone down from time to time. In fact, you have to do it a lot.
You definitely do. How do you interact with, like, your kids when they have their phones? I know they're around my age.
Yeah.
Do they spend a lot of time on their phones?
When we're not talking or not – certainly you don't do it in mealtime or discussion time or
right.
when you're together. Hopefully they're – you know, yeah, they use the phone more than I do, but, you know, yeah. you don't I mean, – it's almost like common courtesy. You don't, you know, sit there and – what'd you say? What if I did the whole show like that with you? What? You know? Is that what we're headed
Murph,
towards?
Are you listening to me?
Right.
No, I mean, I understand. I understand where you're going with that. But there is, in this generation, people will go to their phones because of how fast people tweet. Like you said, it's so instant. Even the reporters are getting their updates from the announcers. As soon as they get an update, they tweet it out. That's what reporters do now. They tweet. They just tweet.
Yeah,
tweet.
Eight of them will. Our president none of them have
tweets.
Any insight.
Our president tweets more than anybody in the world right now. You know?
Don't
and
get
so.
Me started. Jonathan in North Carolina. Welcome, Jonathan. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Great.
Good.
All right. I was just calling about your question for today. For me, the best way to watch the game is however I can get it. In North Carolina, I don't have cable, and so the stream, you know, works for me. I remember times when I was in Korea because I'm in the military. Whatever way I can get to it, if it's on the internet through Twitter or through Amazon, that's going to be the best way for me. So I think there's a new generation that's leaning that way to, you know, might not have cable TV at home. And if it's available through streaming it, that's what they're going to do, if that makes sense.
Yeah, as a last resort, I get that, sure. And to be honest, when you think about the Amazon deal, the $50 million deal that precipitated our whole show today, a lot of that is geared towards people who are not around a television set, can't get to a television set. A lot of it is geared towards people around the world, I think. People who are not in America, who are not, as you point out, maybe not around a TV set that will broadcast an NFL game. And I get that. That's a last resort. I like that.
I mean, you know, Recode is now saying that, what, Amazon has 66 million subscribers. Something like this could grow their subscriber base. It really could, just because people want to watch the game. And it's like $100 a year to subscribe to Amazon. And you can buy anything on Amazon. So people will subscribe. They'll order things on there, have it sent to them right away. Now you can watch NFL games. Everything is moving that way. Cable costs so much money. You know, you're talking about, we talked about this, how much cable costs now. And the younger generation is like, I'm not paying $200 a month for cable. I'd rather just go with something else and I pay $20 a month. And I'm streaming it through the internet.
is the TV experience as good streaming video as it is over cable? I don't think it is.
No, yeah. It's definitely not.
Watching stuff on your phone, I'm asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, because I don't really.
You don't care about the quality of the picture.
No. Nah,
right?
the big difference for me is I'll watch, like I said earlier, I'll watch it on my phone if I'm not sitting in front of a TV. Now, if I'm sitting at home in front of my TV, I'm obviously going to watch it on TV. I'll still go to my phone for updates on injuries around the league. But there's nothing like sitting in front of a big screen TV, surround sound, all of that stuff. It's like a theater. You can sit in front of your TV, enjoy it. I'd rather sit in front of a TV than to go to the game. I'll say that. But I only watch it on my phone if I'm not at home.
Here's a call from Frank in Williamsville. Hello, Frank. Best way to watch a game? What do you think?
Well, John, I'm kind of like you. I'm around the same age, and I'll tell you, I was not computer illiterate growing up, but I've raised a white flag at Twitter. I can't understand it. I don't understand why people want to go to it. You got this limited amount of characters you can put up. It seems to me people just want to put things down, but they don't want to read anything. I don't know. As far as the games go, put me in front of my TV set or two TV sets where I can follow the games. I used to have season tickets, and I came to the conclusion that the games are made for television with all the timeouts and the replays, et cetera. And I would be sitting in my seat at the stadium wondering, gee, I wish I had my television so I could watch what's going on right now, you know, and I could see the replays, et cetera. But,
you'd rather watch on TV than be in stadium for the most part?
Right. Plus, not to mention the hassle factor of it's an all-day event, in and out of the stadium, and then having to deal with the idiots out there. There's a safety factor for me and my kids, etc., that I just felt like I'm just not going to put up with it anymore. I'm just going to watch it at home.
I would think the safety, you might be overplaying that a little bit. People come and go to these games for the most part and survive intact, go home. But I get it. You know, it's a hassle to come here, and it's a hassle to be out in the elements sometimes, and parking, all of that. Some people enjoy the ritual, you know, the parking lot ritual, and make a full day of it. It is a full day. I get all that, and I get why TV might appeal to you in that regard.
It's just a generational thing. I really think.
Well, I don't know. He's my age. What do you mean? What generation?
I mean, so my generation, we stream more than your generation would. You know, we just do. Like the other day, even our producer, JJ, those guys went to the hockey game on Monday. But the NCAA championship game was that night as well. And they were up in the booth for the hockey game. And I said to JJ, you know, you guys are not going to watch the NCAA game. You're going to go to the hockey game. And he was like, I'm going to watch it on my phone.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's just the first thing we go to. I'm going to watch it on my phone. If you're not at home, you're going to find a way. And it's usually some app, ESPN, Fox, CBS app, where they will let you stream the game.
I wonder how much of the game he saw, really saw. I mean, look at the score. Look at this replay. Look at that dunk. But did you really watch the game?
Nah, he probably just had it on.
Kept an eye on it.
Just had it on.
Which is
like
fine.
Background
you do what you got to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that goes to you watching football on your phone, NFL on your phone. Are you really watching a game?
No, because I keep going back and forth. I keep going back to Twitter, and then I'll go back to the game. But I do that
teeny tiny attention span. Right? That's what you're talking about. You can't focus on one thing for more than 3 or 4 minutes. What are you, crazy? Not even 3 or 4 minutes. Here's Rick in California. That was a gratuitous shot. Rick in California. Go ahead, Rick. You're on the air.
Hey, Mr. Murph, Donald, how you guys doing?
Great.
Good.
Good. Hey, I had an observation and a question for you, but to start off, I like to say, for me, I think TV is the way to go to watch football, but in my experience, I do a lot of work out of state, like for Hawaii example, and when I'm in Hawaii, 7 a.m. football is tough enough. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have the option to watch my Bills over in Hawaii unless I do stream it off my phone, so... And convenience-wise, I think it's turning that way, which I don't mind it because I get to watch my Bills, you know?
Yeah. Isn't 7 a.m. football fun for the most part as far as –
Just walk, wake up, and it's on?
And plus, you have the rest of the day when the game's over. Isn't that fun or no?
Well, what was really tough is when we were playing in London, I had to wake up at 3:30 in the morning just to watch that game.
Yeah.
You know? And that was kind of tough, but it is fun. I will admit that. It's fun as hell. But back to my original point, so let me ask you this. I wasn't listening the last couple of days, so I don't know if you guys touched base on this or not. But if the NFL doesn't have any requirements of how many coaches you can hire, wouldn't it be beneficial to the Bills to hire a specific coach to work with Cordell Jones specifically so that way they don't have to worry about the time restraint or having the chance to develop him a little better. And I just want to see what you guys thought about that. And on a second note, the only way I believe if the number two receiver is on the roster right now is if Mr. McDermott is planning on putting Sammy Watkins as a number two receiver and hoping to pick a receiver as number one to the draft. I'll go ahead and hang up right now and hear what you guys
are. Well, before you hang up, Rick, what do you? I don't get your second point. What's your point?
That he doesn't think the number two is on the team.
Yeah, Sean McDermott keeps claiming that we have the number two receiver on the roster right now. And, you know, with respect to Donald and his opinion about Charles Clay, that can definitely be so. But in my opinion, if the number two receiver is on the roster, it has to be Sammy Watkins. And we're hoping to pull a number one receiver from the draft. That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, maybe that's what he meant. I doubt it, but do you think that's what Coach McDermott meant?
I think he's just hoping that one of these guys that are already on the roster will just prove to be the number two receiver. Obviously, you can draft someone, but any coach will tell you, you cannot count on a rookie coming into this league and just stepping in and being a great impact. Like, it happens every year. Yes, it does, but you don't know that they're going to step right in and just make a great impact on your team. So you hope that a guy that's already on your roster is that guy.
And his first point about a coach hired specifically to work with Carnell Jones, I guess you could do that, yeah, and it's not even a money question. More than anything, it's a time question, not for the coach as much as it is for the player, Carnell Jones. So what kind of a structured day are we talking about if there's a coach specifically hired to tutor a young quarterback? We'll leave Carnell out of it. So that quarterback who's going to learn from going to meetings with his quarterbacks and going to offensive meetings with the coordinators and being on the practice field, running plays, maybe standing on the sidelines, watching him run plays, that's his day. And then what? Then another couple of hours with just his specific tutor?
Probably.
I guess. That's a long day, and I don't know if it doesn't fit in really to what they try to do. But maybe. I'm not saying you couldn't do it. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a long day, but guess what, man? You want to be great? Put the hours in. Put the time in. I understand. You need to have the mindset that I want to be great in everything that I do. So if you're right now, everybody's saying that you're raw, you're not ready, then you need to make sure that you're doing everything that you can do so that they're not saying you're raw anymore. You know, so if they were to hire another coach and that coach can only put the time in after practice, that's what you got to do. The greats will put extra time in after practice. I mean, you look in basketball, Steph Curry and Michael Jordan, Kobe, all of these guys, they always talk about how much time they put in away from their normal practice time.
So why don't teams do it?
I don't know why teams don't do it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know. It's if we had somebody call in yesterday and ask the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, shouldn't they hire another coach that can put the time in with him?
You know, that's variations of that have taken place in the league. I recall, and he just was here on the last staff, Chris Palmer was senior offensive assistant on Rex's staff. And about 20 years ago, when Drew Bledsoe got into the league, Chris Palmer was on the Patriots staff, and his role was to be Drew Bledsoe's coach, to tutor Drew Bledsoe. Now, I believe it might have been the quarterback coach at the time or maybe an offensive assistant, but that was his role, to work with Drew Bledsoe. So it's been done, and it does get done.
Drew Bledsoe was the starter?
Yeah. Yeah, first round, first overall pick.
So you do it for your backup?
Yeah. I don't know. That's another
question. You hire another coach for your backup quarterback?
Yeah. There's also an element, isn't there, of sink or swim? Like, if you're good, and you're going to be good, and if you have potential, you will show that.
Yeah.
You know, sink or swim. Throw them in the deep end. You're going to swim, or you're going to flounder, or what?
Right.
I think that applies here, too, a little bit.
It does apply. I mean, for me, I feel like Cardell Jones can learn everything he can learn in the offseason and in camp, but he's not going to really be a good quarterback until he gets into games and he sinks or he swims.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's what he needs to really become a good quarterback. How many of the great quarterbacks did not do well in their first years? Peyton Manning himself was horrible in his first year, you know, and then it took him that first year to really understand the league. And then coming into that second year and then that third year, you got it, and the game kind of slowed down for you, and you can play then. I don't think it's going to slow down for Cardell Jones until he gets into games and does it on a consistent basis.
We're going to take a break. We're going to come back and play fake news, real news when we return to the John Murphy Show with Donald Jones. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We had head coach Sean McDermott on with us earlier today. You can pick that up on the website, buffalobills.com. We've had a vigorous discussion about how you consume NFL games, Donald. I've learned a little bit. I know you think I'm being contentious here, but I have learned about the way you and many people think about how they consume football games. And I'm open-minded. I'm not like a dinosaur. Yeah. I'm not a dinosaur here. I get it. And I get that it's changing, too. I want to know. Believe me, it's in my best interest to know how people consume NFL games and what people think about NFL games. I want to know that.
I think when you look at what ESPN is doing, and you know this, Murph, you pay attention to this stuff, what ESPN is doing as far as, you know, cuts and cutting people's salaries, and it's happening at those big networks. It really is, and it's because they can see a lot more people starting to stream TV through the internet. And it's just everything is moving that way, and it's not just the NFL games. It's TV across the board. People are watching more TV on the internet. The NFL games are just a part of that.
Let's move into a part of the show that we call Fake News, Real News. 6 in 10 Americans believe that traditional media outlets report fake news. Sad but true. 6 in 10 Americans. There's a lot of fake news around football, too, and we're going to kind of sort through some of these issues over the next few minutes here. 6 in 10 believe fake news exists. We want to go to a couple of news items. Christian McCaffrey, Stanford running back, Donald. Mm-hmm. Mel Kiper has him as a top 10 pick in the NFL, this running back, Christian McCaffrey. Fake or real? What do you think?
Fake. I think it's fake news. Christian McCaffrey, was he a beast at Stanford? Yeah, he was. But I think he's a system guy coming into this league. I don't think he'll be able to do the same things that he was able to do in college. You're not going to put him in the backfield and say you're our running back. You're not going to split him out wide and just say you're a wide receiver. So he's in the same boat as a guy like Jabril Peppers, where you don't really know what this guy is. Is he a running back? Is he a receiver? I understand that he can really do a lot of different things, but do you draft a guy in the top 10 that you don't have like a set position for? I don't know if you do that. You look at how many guys that have come out of college, play the same style of football as Christian McCaffrey, and you talk about, you know, Tavon Austin. Even a guy like Reggie Bush, it doesn't always pan in, you know, it doesn't always translate into the NFL, and so I just don't see him being a top 10 pick.
You know, Mel Kiper a couple of months ago had McCaffrey like at the bottom of the first round.
Yeah,
I think many people had him there. Now he's got him as a top 10 pick. What happened?
What happened, right? You know? Maybe he had a good combine. Maybe he's had a decent pro day. Yeah, I get all of that. He runs good times and all of that stuff. Yeah, I get that. But you just don't draft somebody in the top 10, a gadget player. You just don't.
Yeah.
The same thing with Percy Harvin. You know, you can put Percy Harvin, come out of college, you were like, this dude can play any position. And it didn't pan out. Obviously, Percy Harvin had other issues, health issues and stuff like that, but you still never knew how to really get him the ball.
He's a good running back, and we know the trend in the NFL in recent years on running backs. You know, you got to be a special running back, I think, to make an impact in the draft. Especially teams are in the mode, I think, in many respects, to churn through running backs. You know, to get a guy and you know, run him out and get somebody else in here. But Mel Kiper has him as he was at the bottom of the first round, and then a couple weeks ago, 17th, and now he's got him on his board in the top 10. Fake news, real news. I say that's fake. That's not going to happen.
I don't think so.
He's a good player. He'll probably have a good, successful NFL career, but a top 10 premium pick, Christian McCaffrey, I don't think so.
He has to go into the right system, and I think drafting in the top 10, you're trying to draft a sure player. And, you know, how many times do we see guys go in the top 10 that are not sure players, but at least you know their position? You don't even know this guy's position, so I don't think he goes in the top 10.
Fake news, real news. It is brought to you by Yancey's Fancy New York's Artisan Cheese. Next up on the fake news, real news lineup, Marshawn Lynch. Reports are that he is going to wind up with the Oakland Raiders. Does Marshawn being with the Raiders make their offense unstoppable? They've been a good offense for a couple of years now. They've got the guy at quarterback in Carr. To have a lot of offensive production. They have dynamic core of receivers. They've had decent running backs. Does Marshawn make them unstoppable? Is that fake or real? I say fake. I think they're good already. Look, I think the Raiders' offense is going to be good without Marshawn Lynch. Mm-hmm. As I said earlier on in the show, the reports of his signing, you know, I hope Marshawn has success there, but I look at this as mostly a PR signing by the Raiders trying to blunt the impact of them being lame ducks in Oakland for a couple of years.
You know, I'm going to have to go with fake as well on this one. I think, you know, Marshawn Lynch has been a great running back in this league for a long time. Well, it seems like forever, but it's, what, 9 years. He's still, you know, what is he, 30 now?
30, going to be 31 in a couple weeks.
He has a lot of miles on him, you know, and I just don't see him coming back.
A lot of hard miles.
Yes, yes, know? like he's off-roading.
On and off the field.
Exactly. So I don't see him being able to come back and have the same impact. And I don't even know if when he comes back, they will even ask him to have the same impact. They will give him the ball sometimes in short yardage stuff, but they have, I believe, their scat backs. They have been looking for that bruising type of back, like, you know, Adrian Peterson, who they had in, a guy that can be similar to Latavius Murray, who they had last year. Marshawn Lynch might be that guy if he ends up there, but I don't think he makes that offense unstoppable. I think their offense is good as long as Derek Carr is there.
So we both think that's fake. Marshawn does not make them unstoppable. He may wind up there. He may be a contributor, like a specialty back in some sense. But
it won't be like Seattle Marshawn Lynch days. Like, they needed him on that offense because he really changed. They didn't even just need him on the offense. They needed him on the team. His mentality, everything, he was that team.
Fake news, real news. Here's the third and final item on the docket, fake or real today. Patriots are going to wind up with Richard Sherman. We spoke about him in the Seattle Seahawks cornerback. There have been rumors linking Sherman to the Patriots. CSN New England's Tom Curran reported today that the Patriots are, quote, not interested in trading for the three-time All-Pro cornerback. Yesterday, the Boston Herald reported that the Patriots could make a play for Richard Sherman in the coming weeks. The Seahawks acknowledged that they're talking to teams. Is it New England? Do the Patriots trade for Richard Sherman? Fake or real? I'm going fake. They already have their highly paid cornerback. His name is Stephon Gilmore. I don't know that they would even be interested in having Richard Sherman. If they are, I mean, there's already eyebrows raised about what the Patriots offseason has been like. This would put it over the top, I think. I think this would... If they make a trade for Richard Sherman and pay him the money that they'd have to pay him, I think you'd have to start thinking, is this it? Is this it, you know, right, for Belichick and Brady? Do they know something about how much longer they're going to be around? Because that would be incredible to me.
That would be incredible. I mean, they trade for him, you're starting to feel like this is like the NBA. You know, the NBA, you have your big three. You know, it's just crazy. Do you trade for that guy? I don't see them, even though they have a lot of money to spend, I just don't see them trading for him because it's not just the money. It's the draft picks and everything that Seattle is going to ask for. And I don't – like, if you're in Seattle's position, you see the Patriots have been at the top of the NFL for a couple of years now. Do you trade him to the Patriots? Like, you would rather trade him to somewhere else. Like, I don't – even though you're not in the same division, do you trade him to the Patriots? Unless they say, you know what, we're going to give you a first-round pick, we're going to give you this, whatever it is. The Patriots would have to give up a lot to get Richard Sherman. So it's fake.
Fake. I think, was everything fake today? In our
everything
news
was fake.
Yeah, see what I mean? Fake news is prevalent. It's out there, folks. Fake news, real news. We do it every day. It is sponsored by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. We've got a call on the line from Jeff. Hello, Jeff. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Just listening there. I wonder if Marshawn Lynch comes back, he'll be sweating pure THC after a couple of years of retirement. But getting back to what I wanted to call about, I wanted to talk about Cardale Jones and what the allure of Cardale Jones is. For me, I don't understand it, really, and why there's so much talk about developing him. He did not even beat out JT Barrett as the overall starting quarterback at Ohio State. So what is it that people see in Cardale Jones that makes him this guy that with a little bit of polishing can be a real star? Because he reminds me of Jamarcus Russell. I just wanted to get your thoughts.
Hey, Jeff, that's a really good point. In fact, in the break, the last break we took, I was talking to one of our producers about that, and I guess we kind of boiled it down to numbers. He said, what's the percentage chance would you give of Cardale Jones being a good, you know, NFL starting quarterback in the league? And I said, right now, what I've seen, limited work I've seen, 15-20%. Now, I will let Donald answer this because I know he has thoughts on this too. Your question basically is, Jeff, what's the attraction, I think? Because you're right. People have kind of they invest a lot of hope in Cardale Jones. I think it has to do basically with his stature, with his size. Mm-hmm. He's impressive. Even this week, watching some of the workouts, you're like, whoa, who's that guy with the red jersey on? You know, he looks like the part of a – you know, 21st century Cam Newton-esque passer. But he's not anywhere near that yet. And as you point out, Jeff, he doesn't have a lengthy college resume to make you think that he could become that, you know. We'll see. I'm all for investing in him and his future and seeing what you got there. But if you're holding out hope for him as the next franchise quarterback, you know, that's long odds, I believe. I'm not saying it won't happen, but I think those are long odds.
And, you know, the crazy thing is we won't know. Obviously, we saw a small sample bite size of what he can do in the Jets game last year, the second half of the Jets game last year. But you won't know unless he gets in a game, like I talked about earlier. You just won't know. He has to get into a game to be able to really develop into a better quarterback. It's trial by fire. You can't develop unless you get those game reps. And so, you know, like you said, people like Cardell Jones because of his stature. It's the same reason why Pat Mahomes is moving up the draft board right now. Yeah. You know, his stature, he's big, he has the big arm, and that's what you're talking about when you draft a guy. It's projection, you know, and when you talk about projection in this league, in the NBA, they draft people because of their size. I mean, that's why you draft the guy, and you hope that that person can develop into being a good quarterback. So you start off with the size, and that's why so many people like Cardell Jones.
You know, and there's also, I think, quarterback development is tough.
It is.
It can be slow. It can be painful at times. Look, there's the starting quarterback on this Bills roster is still in a developmental stage in some respects. Mm-hmm. 2 years as a starter for Tyrod Taylor, years before that as a backup in the league. But we all know he has holes in his game. He has stuff he's got to do better. We talk about it all the time on the show. And look, Tyrod Taylor, in his own way, is an impressive physical specimen. He's not a tall, big guy like Cardell Jones or Cam Newton, but he's got a lot of athleticism and a lot of ability. And what you're in the middle of here with the Buffalo Bills and Tyrod Taylor is an attempt to refine that and develop that and get the best out of him. And it's a process. It doesn't, you know, very few quarterbacks are plug and play, come out of the draft and go, you're the starter, you're the franchise quarterback. Doesn't happen often. Certainly hasn't happened with Tyrod Taylor, and it hasn't happened with Cardell Jones. If you're willing to invest some coaching into him and some mentorship and some time, because it does take time, you just might get a good NFL quarterback. But that they're still, in Cardell's case, in the early stages of that kind of development. Tyrod is pretty much further down the road, but still developing.
I think even when you're trying to develop, you know, a young quarterback into being a great quarterback in this league, at the same time, you got to make sure you have the right pieces around so that that guy can become a great quarterback. Like even Andrew Luck, everybody talks about Andrew Luck as being the next great, great quarterback in this league. The best, when you think 10 years from now, who are you going to say is the best quarterback in this league? And people will say Andrew Luck, but they haven't put the weapons around him, nor have they put the offensive line so that he can stay upright, you know? And so when you go across the league at guys that have come in very early and had good careers, you look at, or at least good seasons, we just talked about Derek Carr, a great offensive line. He has receivers that make plays for him. Last year he had running backs as well. You know, you look down in, at Dak Prescott. He had a great offensive line. He could stand back there and throw the ball around. If he didn't have that offensive line, will we still be saying that Dak Prescott be the starter? I don't know. Yeah. Tony Romo might still be the starter.
Good points. Jack in Kenmore. Hello, Jack. You got some thoughts on the way we consume NFL football. What do you have?
You know, I find it really, really impossible to just sit in front of a television for 3 hours. So you're going to really like my answer, Murph. What I like to do is plug in a headset, plug it into my radio, go outside, listen to the broadcast. During the nice weather, I'm going to work in the yard. During the rough weather, I'm going to do chores around the house, and I'm going to enjoy the game on the radio.
That's great.
So you don't even watch the games?
Nah, can't sit there for that whole thing.
Wow. Man.
That's rare, but cool.
That is rare, yeah. That's the first answer we've heard that today.
Be on. It's a really fantastic play, and I hear Murph call it. I'll head to the TV and look at the replay.
Very cool. Thanks very much, Jack. Now, go ahead.
Would
make
you do
some.
No, nah, I mean, would you do
ahead.
That?
Would I do what? Listen to games and not
watch?
I'll tell you what. Not. I mean, I'm in a different spot with NFL football. Yeah. There are times when I'd rather, and I think it's a lot of time, I'd rather listen to a Major League Baseball game than watch it. You know, driving. I mean, not sitting around the, you know, the radio set at home in front of the RCA Victor radio set listening to Major League Baseball. But if I'm in a car and there's a chance to listen to a big league baseball game on the radio, And that chance is now coming up. We're in the season now. Yeah, I'll do that a lot. I love
baseball
that.
Is so different than me. Like,
sure it is.
I mean, you know, the action in baseball is just totally different than football. I like to watch the actual – but maybe I'm different just because I played the game and I love football. I know you will listen to a hockey game in the car.
I try to. They never give the score. It's hard to listen to it.
Yeah, you're right.
They don't. I mean, it's a TV broadcast. I never hear the score.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's another story. But
true.
I know, you know, it's just – I've never heard that. Somebody say, like, I don't watch the game. I just want to hear it. I've never really heard
that. I've never heard that. I don't hear it enough. That's for damn sure. Jose in Buffalo. Jose, you're on the air. Go ahead, Jose.
Hey, real quick to that point, though. I know me. I turn off the volume on the TV. Murph, you're one of my favorite play-by-play announcers. Oh. I listen to you on the radio, and I watch the game. So
what a great way to end the show. This is great. Keep it coming, Jose.
I was just, maybe you guys can help me with this, but your producer kind of touched on it a little bit. But why are college coaches stuck on not trying to, you know, bring these quarterbacks and run pro-style offenses for these quarterbacks? Because we run into this problem where, you know, time and time again, is a quarterback may look good, but, you know, he doesn't run a pro-style offense, doesn't cut in the center, nothing like that. And, you know, they come, you know, like somebody said earlier, Jamarcus Russell, one of the biggest busts ever. In college, he was a beast. Right. But when he comes to, the NFL, bust. EJ Manuel, same thing in my eyes. Why can't these college coaches, you know what I mean, try to up the brand of football itself and run pro style offenses where, you know, where these quarterbacks can thrive?
Donald, why don't you take that one?
Well, there's a bigger picture there, right? In college football, you look at how much money college football makes. And then you look at how much money these college coaches make when they win. And they end up winning a lot. You end up making it to the big time programs. So obviously, these coaches want to win championships. College football, you can spread it out. Most teams are spreading it out now, and you can win championships. If you have the right guy who is mobile enough to get it done, who has the arm, you can win. I mean, it's totally different game. And so college coaches, even though you want your players to go on to the NFL and be great players in the NFL because it does it's good for your college program, we're not really thinking about that. We want to win games. No, it's not their job. We want to win games. And if we win games and we win every year, well, guess what? As a coach personally, I get to move up the ladder.
And I think what you're saying, and I agree with this, it's easier to win games at that level because the talent disparity is greater.
Exactly.
If you're Baylor, you can go out there and chuck it around the yard all day, and you're going to beat most teams.
You're going to beat most teams.
You have better players than
exactly. they. Exactly. You have better receivers than their DBs. You have a good running back, and you spread out. You go five or four wide with the running back. Now he has crazy holes to run through. You know, it's a total different game.
Hey, Bills fans, want to invite you as we approach the draft, and we're now 3 weeks away from the draft, you can participate in the Predict the Picked contest presented by M&T Bank. It's on our website, buffalobills.com. And it goes right through the day before the draft. All you have to do is predict who the Bills will select first. You've got great prizes, including a chance to meet the draft pick, a new era draft cap. And check it out on our website, buffalobills.com. Predict the Pick, presented by M&T Bank. Just 3 weeks left now before the draft and 3 weeks left to participate in that. Back to wrap things up in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
It's presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and theaters with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Sean McDermott, perhaps you've heard of him, Bills head coach, in studio with us today, our lone guest today. Sean McDermott talked about his meeting earlier this week with some of the members, some of the all-timers from the Buffalo Bills Super Bowl teams of 20 years ago. Here's what the coach had to say.
Well, I just felt it was important to reach out to our alumni and let them know that they're all important. And, of course, I would love to have done it with everyone. Just, you know, it's hard to do that. But, you know, wanted to get out and find out what it means to put the helmet on, find out what it means to win in this city, what it looks like, and just better understand our situation so that I can convey all of that and build it into what we're doing And then part of it was you know, building relationships with our alumni, and then finally was, you know, verifying some things as a coach. I'm always trying to learn, and those guys provided a great learning environment for me to take some notes and to reaffirm some things for myself, and then look forward to putting those into action here.
Sean McDermott on his meeting with the Bills alumni from 20 years ago. As I said earlier, love to be a fly on the wall at that one. It's too late now. But
yeah, it's
too late. There's a lot of funny stuff, but maybe some meaningful stuff too.
Both.
Yeah.
There's a combination of both, probably at the same time, you know, and I think it was – I wish I could have been a fly on the wall in that meeting.
You're coming tomorrow, right, because we got a good show tomorrow. I believe Steve Randazzo, comedian, used to be on the television show The League. You familiar with his work?
I think I've heard of him.
He's coming in tomorrow, believe it or not, to probably do a comedy set for us tomorrow.
Oh, that's good. He's coming on set?
Yeah, I believe he is. Oh, also, tomorrow, Donald, you're going to break down some of the tight end prospects.
Yep.
What do you got in mind there?
Well, you know, we talked a lot about O.J. Howard, and I know a lot of people say we should draft O.J. Howard, but this is a deep tight end class as well, and I think, you know, we need to talk about a couple more guys and not O.J. Howard.
And Dane Brugler will join us as well to preview the draft 3 weeks away. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our Entercom board op today, Derek Kramer, production assistant from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, James Donovan, Jay Harris, the producer. See you tomorrow at noon, the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.